Yeah, see, I mentioned Dugan, and that's what's getting boned over here. All right. The audio is fucked, too, by the way. I don't know if that's me or
now,
you.
Now I see. I just said you're live.
Josh, who making lots of. What is he jogging? I think he's jogging, running from Negroes, and the microphone is rubbing against his jacket. Either that or he's in the Paul McRib Club. Paul's audio was so bad, I don't think he even heard me say that he was having analingus with a McRib. All right, buddy. I'll talk to you later, Joshua. Peace out. All right. He's really, boy, oh boy, that was some audio. Kick the guest. Oof. All right. We're going to put Jeffrey Sachs on the back burner on account of, you know, we're here doing what we're supposed to do. I do want to get to this later. This will be in the 10 to 11 hour. Jeffrey Sachs actually has some decent analysis on Syria. And it's fair to say, by the way, that you would not be alone if you required a recapitulation of the Syria situation. It's quite confusing. The borders are ever in flux. And frankly, yeah, it's not to insult anybody, especially not Jeffrey Sachs, who, while Jewish, is quite brilliant, but he does offer a sort of Syria for dummies. so I found it useful as a dummy. So those of you who are smarter than me, you may still find it useful. Okay. Let me show you what else we have later. You must be wondering, why discuss Klaus Schwab, transgenderism, and AI? Oh, that's because it's Alexander Dugan. So we're going to dispel some myths of Dugan, and why did this come up today? Well, I was in the chat on NNR, and I realized while posting about Dugan, because he was doing a Richard Spencer segment within his larger, white nationalism review type series, this Richard Spencer segment came up about this Jewess in Whitefish, Montana, being quote-unquote victimized, not by Richard Spencer directly, but indirectly through some other website, and then the Jewess got upset, and you know all of this. So the business of Dugan came up because, of course, there's a close affiliation between Dugan, Duganism, the insult that you're a Duganist, and Richard Spencer, Richard Spencer's wife. Spoke Russian fluently, and she was in fact a translator to English for Dugan. Okay, and I'm gonna suggest something here that I don't think is too controversial. Once you think about it, I'm pretty certain we wouldn't even know who Dugan is were it not for Richard Spencer's wife being a translator. Because if she wasn't a translator for this particular philosopher, this political philosopher of Eurasianism, if she was not so intimately involved with the thinking and the proposals, you know, what is Duganism in theory and practice? If she wasn't so intimately involved in that, Richard Spencer probably would have never brought it to everybody. Because Dugan is sort of an inconsequential figure. Now that part may be controversial. I mean, he's a thinker, sure. He's a philosopher, sure. But I don't think he's the important philosopher people make him out to be. He's not a political advisor in the sense people think of it. But we'll get into that. We're going to dispel a lot of myths. Let me show you an example of what we mean by dispelling some myths. Okay, so just as you can go on X today, Twitter X, and you can find all of these pro-Trumpenstein copers. I mean, they fucking cope. They cope. You can find them coping, and you can sort of deconstruct what they do. You could have a laugh at it. You could just hit the X button and fucking close it out because it's sort of a joke. You also seen that there's many, many rumors about Trump, you know, the great golden god Trump, the Trump of the gaps, the Trump of the Mythology Sursa 2016, right? So we have all these versions of Trump, and it's pretty much the Trump of people's subconscious. That's what it is. Well, Dugin has become this mythological figure where he resides somewhere in the subconscious of the former alt-right and some of the contemporary people who are just discovering the former alt-right's obsession with philosophers of no consequence. I mean, you would routinely hear Richard Spencer discuss fucking Gramsci. No one gives a shit about Gramsci. Okay, Gramsci is a philosopher of no consequence for today's problems, and certainly not a philosopher for today's solutions. Okay, Gramsci is the only other time anyone's ever heard of Gramsci is when Mayor Buttplug mentioned Gramsci as some kind of big influence on him. Okay. So that's what these people are. These are people where if you know a little bit about them, you get the name drop and you get to look like you're really smart. But are these people of any consequence? Well, I'm going to argue not really, because while we might be able to use a few of the heuristics of great thinkers of the past, I don't think our problem is so complex that we need to rely on numerous old heuristics. This does not take a complex philosophy to unentangle or extricate ourselves from some web of deceit. No, it's much simpler than that. As I've argued before, we need to cut the Gordian knot, you know, sort out, slice, period, end of story. No one should be delving into deep instructions on, okay, how do you suggest we untie the knot? Okay, you twist the rope the opposite direction of the hewn. Get the fuck out of here. Just cut the knot is what we have to do. Unless, of course, you want to get into lengthy instructions on how to untie the knot. Now you're literally back in the old Richard Spencer camp or the current Richard Spencer camp. He's doing the same thing today, only he sort of Richard Spencer of today attempts to distance himself a bit from his old creation or whatever. If he didn't invent the alt-right, let's face it, Richard Spencer popularized the alt-right. I mean, right, he popularized the alt-right. So even if he didn't invent it, which is, I suppose, arguable at some level. So fine. Maybe he didn't invent it, just to be absolutely proper about it. We get it. Now, let me share with you some contemporary Richard Spencer, and then we'll move to based Dugin, anti-white Dugin, the everything to everyone Dugin, the boogeyman Dugin, the hero Dugin, the Dugin that is Putin's brain, all the mythological Dugins you could possibly have swirling in the subconscious of the public mind. We're going to share little slices of those tonight. Okay, but in the meantime, let me show you, on account of we just referenced Spencer, and this entire discussion is coming from a reference to Spencer on NNR show, and being in the chat and seeing how I did not realize that my experience in the alt-right would be useful to anybody today, but I realized in NNR's chat that no one knows what the fuck Duginism is. They were sort of mystified by it. And I think it's important to review that because there will be future Dugins. Okay, there will be future figures that serve as boogeymen, heroes, all things to everyone, therefore nothing to no one. And I think we need to take a close look at that, do almost an autopsy to how did it get to the point where Richard Spencer's wife translates a somewhat unimpressive thought leader in Russia. And next thing you know, Tucker Carlson's interviewing this fucking guy. How do we get there? Well, we're going to discuss how we get there. So first things first. Let's go to the stop screen. Let's open a video file for Dickie Spence. Sorry for the lumpy start here. So Dickie Spence, we can find him discussing the dissident right as an all-Zionist project. Well, that's interesting. I don't disagree with him if you consider the dissident right what it is today with Barry Weiss and fucking Ben Shapiro. Sure, sure. Kind of like that idea. Oh, seeing my desktop reminds me, P.S. I also have for you Keir Starmer's inaudible address. I've cleaned up the audio, and I think you should be able to hear it by now. And then once we do this, kicking off the show, of course, getting into the content, then I'll go over to the chats and say hello to everybody.
It's almost a consensus now. This is the logic. This is how you understand the Christian Zionists, you know, Hagee and et cetera. Why can't we apply this logic to the dissident right itself? Like, I would not be surprised at all if we discover that some of these Hitlerist or, you know, people with like David Koresh avatars and so on are just outright like working for Zionist. And I don't say that as like groundless speculation or I'm trying to pick fights or whatever. It fits exactly with the logic of what they always do. So is the we've seen this great noticing lead to a Zionist president. And why shouldn't we conclude or at least there should be a strong suggestion in our mind that the whole dissident right is a kind of Zionist project. And Elon's Twitter, where he's allowed for more anti-Semitism than we've seen at least recently. We probably saw this amount back in 2016 or something.
Yeah, so there you have it. We'll leave Richard frozen there on the screen so we can review some of what Richard Spencer talks about. And then you'll hear the thinking of Dugin coming out of Richard Spencer's mouth. For reference, we'll do this because we're about to get into the thinking of Dugin. But while we're here on Dickie Spence, I feel like you ought to hear what Dickie Spence says about the Holocaust.
Well, this has definitely been a meme for a long time. And let me say, first off, I don't reject historical revision of any kind. And if serious people want to engage in serious revision, I don't really have a problem with it. I would say this, even revision, even substantial revision, let's say that we revise the number, the 6 million number, down by half. I mean, that would be a humongous historical revision. I mean, people would have to change textbooks, new History Channel documentaries. 3 million people perished in the Holocaust. Or let's say we take it down to, you know, 1 million or 750,000. It is always going to be seen as a truly terrible moment. So this idea that we're going to all be caught free and that the guilt will just be lifted and media will allow them to be Nazis or whatever is just total hocus pocus and silliness. So it's not going to work like that. We can go and deconstruct body counts, or we can move beyond it. I mean, the reason why it is a guilt complex is to a very large degree because of the mass media and Hollywood and academia, whatever. But we are the ones in believing it. We need to move beyond this guilt of history. The people who are obsessed with the 1930s or the Holocaust or the Second World War, for good and for ill, are kind of trapped in that same Hitler complex. They're making Hitler either the positive or the negative moral center of the universe. Hitler was a figure from the past, a terrible figure.
Oh, okay, Richard. Listen, Richard Spencer almost sounded there like he was telling you don't look into the Holocaust because it causes all sorts of problems, including for him. Which is really probably his concern. He is so fucking lispy. It's super annoying. How anyone could have thought this guy would have run anything is real. I mean, I don't know. Not long term. I could see him being a coordinator, but the dude up front cannot have a lisp, right? I think we can all agree on this. I've said this before. It's nothing against anybody with a lisp. It's like Robert Kennedy Jr. Okay, is he brilliant at what he does? Yes, he has masterful recall of Lancet Medical Journal articles. Okay, great. But his voice is so off-putting. He's so difficult to listen to. You can't make him your spokesperson, right? Which is why the anti-vax people, I know he's not anti-vax, whatever, they cling on to him, but that's a bad, boy, that's bad. That's a bad move. You want your anti-vax person to be either some well-put-together dissident doctor who looks like a daytime TV actor. I hate to say it, America is that shallow. Or some mildly attractive, not too hot, not so hot no one listens to her, but mildly attractive, like a 7.8 on the out of 10 scale. A woman like that, where people could say, oh, they look at her and want to keep looking at her, but they could still hear what she's saying. As soon as you go 9 out of 10, a woman is so hot, people can't really even hear what she's saying when they're looking at her. So that's what should be happening. Of course, no one's going to take my advice because it sounds so shallow. My advice sounds idiotic, but it would absolutely work. This is how it works. My short stint in PR taught me how dishonest public relations is. How thin are the requirements of the average public to want more of something based on so fucking little. But anyway, there was Dickie Spence on the Holocaust. So yeah, don't look into the Holocaust. You're in the Hitler complex. I don't know what to make of that. I guess he's saying he doesn't, whatever, he doesn't argue with revisionists, but at the same time, he's telling you don't be a revisionist. So I don't know. This is Richard Spencer for you. It's always like this. It's Richard Spencer's a lot like Dugin in this way. Richard Spencer is trying to be everything to everyone. He's telling you, I believe the revisionists. The revisionists are right, but don't be a revisionist. You're in the Hitler complex. Hitler's a terrible figure, so don't align with that. It's like, well, if I'm correcting the historical record, it doesn't necessarily mean I'm aligning with Hitler. Like, this is the first problem that Richard Spencer falls into. Dickie Spence. We have some other goodies. We have some other goodies from Richard to remind you of his take and his change, okay? His post-Dugin change. Let's hear how Dugin has changed, Dickie Spence. Richard Spencer on Media Gatekeepers.
I recognize that there needs to be a gatekeeper media.
Okay, well, that's interesting. I mean, maybe in a perfect country run by white people, you could have such a thing, but let's see what he means. Why do we need a gatekeeper media, Richard?
I recognize that there needs to be a gatekeeper media for people's like brains to stay in their heads.
Oh, I see. Okay. Remember when Richard told everyone that if you disagreed with taking the COVID shot, if you had any hesitancy about the COVID shot whatsoever, which most rational people at least had second guesses about it, even if they went and took it, he typified it as people believing it was
the devil's semen being injected into you.
Well, I don't think that's very fair. I don't think that's really fair. But not only does there need to be a gatekeeper media.
This is something that I've reached this conclusion that in some ways is quite conservative, which is that we need gatekeepers at the end of the day.
Okay, so we need gatekeepers.
We need gatekeepers.
There you go. Here's a reminder of how gay he is. I want you to listen to the S in fascinating.
What I found fascinating.
Oh, my God. I didn't fuck with the audio. You're going to think I messed with the audio. I did not mess with the audio. What he finds fascinating.
What I found fascinating.
Yes, Richard.
And I was thinking, what in the actual fuck is this?
Okay, see, that's the only cool thing he's ever said. Well, that and become who you are. But also concerning, falling in line with what in the actual fuck is this, Dickie Spence believes...
You have to lie to the people.
Okay, so that's his leadership style. So he really is revealing himself as... a member of the dark triad personality cult. So maybe he's a narcissist. I don't know. I think he fancies himself a Machiavellian. That's just who he is. Okay. So this was a flawed figure from the start. We dodged a bullet, sort of, not really having him around. We should probably be thankful. I know it doesn't look that way maybe right now, but a dude who talks about things like...
this, like, Caducean twirl.
Okay, listen. I know I have a lot of obscure references, and sure, I might say inappropriate things about Jeff Southern's rear end, and, well, frankly, a lot of rear ends. However, I don't believe you've ever heard me made a reference to the Caducean twirl. What insight am I supposed to gain from the Caducean twirl, right?
Right.
Yeah, what?
Right.
Yeah. What do you mean the Caducean twirl? This fucking guy. We should probably all be glad.
The all right's over.
And yeah, we kind of are. Except the only problem is we went from the alt-right frying pan into the Barry Weiss fire. We're now in the Barry Weiss fire with Ben fucking Shapiro, the auctioneer, and the rest of it. Oh, man, man, man. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I think that's enough of Dickie Spence. Okay, we got to hear one more time.
This, like, Caducean twirl.
Okay, that's enough. Now I've heard enough Richard Spencer for a lifetime. Caducean twirl. He does talk about Apollonism and things like that. It's just, it's a bit much. It is truly pretentious. When it's useful to make a scholarly reference, I think we should do it. But when you use scholarly citation as a flourish, you're just trying to show off, really. I mean, aren't you? I think. Anyway, maybe that's just me, Richard. You do you, Richard. You're much more successful than me, so what do I know? No one should be following anything I say. Let's just put that out there. Yeah, put that out there. Maybe do the opposite of what I do. I think results will vary, but they might be an improvement over how things are going. So there you go. There you go. Fucking Dickie Spence. By the way, I said we'd be going to the chats. Let's do that, and then we're going to get back into the Duganism deep dive. A deep dive. Barry Weiss is a solid wood. Serb, probably, LOL. Well, listen, don't pick on Serbian Bull. I think I might have. I might have. Did Barry Weiss go to a high school in Long Island, New York? Because I might, there was a under the bleachers, I'm thinking it was Barry Weiss. So I'm just saying. I think it's what turned her lesbian, which would make a lot of sense. Actually, it's all coming together now.
Well, hey, hello. Welcome to the stream, everybody.
It never ends. It never ends. It's always something. Mm. So how are you guys? Welcome. Who do we have here? We got
Straight Out of Swampton, MFC Norcal, Kick Chef, Serbian Bull, Fox Die. Did I say Kick Chef? Yes, I did. And of course, Serb to the Bull, Dang Doll. The struggle is real. I like it. Kick Chef. Yep, I did fall on a wood chipper. Thank God I wasn't running. And Leaping Dodger in the His Isle. Oh, he's honest, just joined us. There we go. Okay, excellent. Let's go over to the F to the T to the J's. What just happened? I clicked over here and it said delete everything. Wow, that's pretty wild. Okay. Oh, thank you, Bushmaster 6A. Bushmaster 6A with $5 over here. Appreciate that. Yes, we should all be supporting more of what we want to see in the world. That is how it works. Yeah, I realize this lumpy start today, boy, that's not exactly bringing my best now, is it? Not exactly. Yes, Dickie Spence. Gee. Right on. Right on. Uh-oh. Who got banned? That's interesting. Well, hopefully Kick Chef didn't get banned. Oh, I see what Serbian Bull's breaking his balls, but I get it. Okay. He did like a mock technicality on him. Oh, you irascible dog. As we were saying, hello, Lisa from Germany in the FTJ chat. nice to see you. I thank Bushmaster, yes. And Burn Before Reading, good to see you. Josh Who in the His Isle, informing us of the Apple Jew phone. Oh, what's this? Interesting. Josh Who's got a little update on the Apple Jew phone, everybody. Hit your links. Psycho Drilla in the His Isle. Excellent. Well, how about this? I'll ask you to share the link. Share the show link. Go up to the URL, copy, paste, and get it the fuck out there. We've got Jews to kill. I mean, defeat. Euphemistically. You know what I mean. Modern Viking, nice to see you. Everyone, share the show link. Share the show link. Share the show link or dono. Share the show link or dono. There you go. Put on your They Live glasses. Let's discuss Dugan before I show some of this video, because if you don't have a little background on Dugan, and then you see and hear Dugan, it can be quite disorienting, because Dugan is like a Rorschach for political dissidents, okay? For the dissatisfied, for the politically dissatisfied, he's a Rorschach test. Dugan says a little of everything at some point or another, and therefore he says nothing, okay? So Dugan's job is literally to be everything to everyone, philosophically, politically, and so therefore he's nothing, okay? Dugan isn't Putin's brain so much as he is a father of Russo-national multiracialist, because Russia is, after all, multiracialist, because it's trans oblast, and so he's the father of the Russo-national multiracialist trans oblast political theory that he sometimes calls the fourth way, or the fourth political theory, intended to offer something for all disparate groups in an attempt to unify the many, many peoples of Russia, greater Russia, okay? And this makes sense, by the way, why people would misapply this idea of Duganism to people they dislike on the far right, or what used to be the alt-right, and they call you a Duganist, okay? It makes sense why they would wrongly apply Duganism as a framework to people in America who are dissatisfied, because, after all, America is a lot like greater Russia. It's a patchwork country, sort of, you know, except our patchwork is more geographically tight, right? Not as distant as some of the oblasts, and roughly uniform, because we have almost a uniparty. But also we're a little less homogenized culturally, right? So in other words, we definitely have cultural differences that are causing conflict, to the point where anyone with eyes to see can realize, even if they're not racial like we are, they see that we're culturally incompatible. Now, in Russia, believe it or not, there's less of this. There's less of this as a problem. Culture in Russia is a great deal more homogenized. The argument is, according to Dugan and other thinkers like him, that, well, hey, lots of people come to Russia. Lots of people are in Russia. But even if they're Muslim, even if they're this or that or the other thing, they have something Russian about them. And that's what Dugan likes to focus on. Okay, so just to be clear, what we're about to do, I'm not praising Vladdy Daddy. I'm just going to talk the realities of Duganism. And I had no idea that my understanding of Duganism would ever be fucking useful again, because I thought it was just a relic of an insult. But as it turns out, it's a it's an entire story that traces back to Richard Spencer and leads all the way up to Tucker Carlson. And Dugan even became a central figure in this fucking Ukraine thing. Ukrainian state killed his daughter. Okay. And this guy is not Putin's brain. He's not even friends with Putin. So far as I know, he's never even advised for Putin. And yet the story is out there that this guy's Putin's brain. And Ukraine thought he was so important to Putin, they would have to kill his daughter to demoralize him, or attempt to kill him and end up killing his daughter, whatever story you go with. everyone knows, and the Ukrainian security state admits that they killed Dugin's daughter. So where do we go from here? Oh, Alex Wazlak is here. Thanks, buddy. All right, all right. Had the salt spreader dialed in just right yesterday. Well, look at this guy go. God damn. All right, I'll look at more of that later. That's fascinating. Yes. Let's jump into some of the Dugin bits, shall we? Oh, that's fucking Keir Starmer. We'll get to him later. A fairly important talk, which, interestingly, no one could fucking hear. I have no idea why the audio was so shite. He had no microphone in front of him. Look at that. I mean, what leader of a state, fucking MP, doesn't have a microphone in front of him? It's kind of crazy. Look at this. Look at this. No mic. No mic. No mic. So the only audio we have of this thing is the person holding the phone looking at him. But I've bumped the audio, run it through a low-pass filter, a high-pass filter, I should say. It made it sound a lot better. And a variety of noise reduction processes. So we'll see what he said. A little later from the 10 to 11 hour, he's talking about Tommy Robinson. He's misreferring to some of his Tommy Robinson's violations. Yes, you'll see. You'll see. You'll see. Starmer playing the victim. Instead of accepting that what he and his government has done is wrong, that they claim that threats have been sent and he doesn't have to fucking tolerate any criticism of his handling of the rape gangs. It's like, well, no. Sorry, Keir Starmer. What you've done is inexcusable. Okay. So Keir Starmer, of course, like any politician, would like to focus on how he's going to get on with the job of protecting victims or whatever. But never discussing accountability for themselves, of course. So in that, very similar to America. Also for you later, I gave the Sean Ryan show a listen, and I've pulled out some goodie bits about the Cybertruck explosion, or should we say Cybertruck fireworks show would be more appropriate, right? I think we all agree with that. Oh, look. Here we have Elon approved content. Spencer is a fan too. August 27, 2024. As is Dugin, though he has a bit of a thing about hating white people and white civilization. Let's see if this accusation holds true. Okay, let's see if this holds true. Is Dugin our guy? Or is he a pretend friend of white people? Is he a white-hating shitbag? We'll have to find out. I'm going to keep you in suspense before we reveal that to you. Okay. All right, that's the Tucker. Bam. We'll be showing you some Tucker in a bit. And let's not forget, look at this, look at this, look at this. Okay, here's your average rando. Much like you'd have your average rando making accusations about Trump's greatness or Trump's servitude to Israel, which of course is true, or Trump's accusations against Trump about whatever court case he's involved in. There's always FUD, a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Let's see what this is about regarding Dugin. Check this. Dugin, he's discussing Dugin. He's a globalist WEF puppet like former WEF global young leader Vladimir Putin that Klaus Schwab groomed when he was a young puppy. So reading this, he's either saying that Dugin was puppeteered by Klaus Schwab as a part of the WEF young global leader group, or he's saying that Vladimir Putin. So either Vladimir Putin or Dugin was a member of the young global leaders and was brought up by, groomed by Klaus Schwab. I know it seems silly, right? But let's take a look, shall we? So this paper, You can see who's involved in the writing of the paper. This paper proves nothing of what the person said. Global security in a multipolar world. The only thing multipolar world means is that this aligns with a Russian perspective. Russians are advancing the notion of a multipolar world. So are all the BRICS countries. Okay? And that's because they see American adventurism and expansionism as the major problem in the world. They see American expansionism and empire as NATO. NATO sometimes is a velvet glove with an iron fist, but usually it's just an iron fist. And it was recently knocking on the door of Russia in Ukraine, and this is why all this Ukraine shit's going down, or a big part of reason why. Okay, so that's all this proves. It doesn't prove anything other than the words multipolar world have been stated, that phrase has been said by Dugin. It's also been said by Putin. But it's also been said by anyone else who's discussing realities of global power arbitrage in what is a war between the West and the Eurasian powers. So we all know this, but this is not any piece of evidence to say that Klaus Schwab controls Alexander Dugin or Vladimir Putin. Okay. The next photo is not even the next page in the document. No, it's just a strategic intelligence snap off of his phone. It proves nothing. More proving nothing. This is not Alexander Dugin. This is not Vladimir Putin. This is someone else saying they want to build a more multipolar world, which again means that this is probably likely a member of the BRICS. That's all that means. A multipolar world brings back the national champion. Okay, this is not Vladimir Putin. This is not Dugin. This again is meaningless. And we're out of photos. That was all the evidence. That was all the evidence. In other words, you can see how the theories run wild. And people start calling each other Duginist because they believe the accusations without ever checking the facts, okay? Without ever checking the facts. Now, do we have a confusing picture of Alexander Dugin? Yes. Is that in part because of Alexander Dugin himself? Absolutely. Here's a good example. I'm going to show you Dugin really overhyping Trump. There's people out there that would try to tell you that this is some fourth political theory, 4D chess or some shit. I don't know. I just think it's sycophantish behavior. I don't know. Is it distant election engineering? I mean, who the fuck knows? But let's take a look. So here he is. In Russia, everybody enjoys now bro revolution concept. We like it. I have no idea what that means. I guess it's like Russian boomer kind of take. Alexander Dugin, EU with all its globalist perverts. Okay, so far he's right on, is the main loser of Trumpist revolution, not to speak of Ukraine. It's doomed. It is men's world now. Okay, so he's echoing some of the manosphere shit, which people in the manosphere also see themselves in Dugin, because Dugin is everything to everyone. Therefore, he's nothing to anybody. And I'm going to prove this to you. Putin role model for Trump, strong leader. Alexander Dugin is really sparse on the characters here. He won, such said he doesn't mind sounding like Bigfoot. Putin role model for Trump, strong leader. Okay, now Trump's team is becoming role model for Russia. We need the rotation of elites, Pareto, as much as U.S. go ahead. Okay, so just sort of sycophantish pom-pom and cheering, right? Okay. We can move to the next bit of evidence. But is Dugin based? Okay, so we have reason to believe that Dugin is so far a puppet of... Not reason to believe, but we hear the accusations. We've explored the reality or the lack of reality behind accusations like he's a puppet of Putin, or he's a puppet of Klaus Schwab, or Klaus Schwab controls Putin and therefore controls Dugin. Okay, but none of that. We've not seen any of that. That he's a Trumpite, that he's a Trump fanatic. No, he just seems to be. He seems to be enjoying the latest thing, which is very sort of boomer con of him. And let me show you a little something here. I know this is a foreign language account, but stick with me here. You do not need to know the language to see that this is Dugin with Leon Degrelle. Here we have Leon Degrelle. Here we have Dugin with Leon Degrelle. So there we go. Pretty based. Don't know if that means anything beyond Dugin met with Leon Degrelle. Okay. So we're going to show you a little something after, I would say, an expansion upon Duginism, so we can better try to understand what Duginism is. Who is this Alexander Dugin? Okay, well, he is a prominent Russian thinker. And almost most importantly, what makes him different from U.S. thinkers of any renown is that he's a counter-individualist. Some of what you're going to hear is going to be very hard to understand because it runs literally counter to the ingrained thinking of most Americans. Just incidentally, Americans think within the framework that they've been raised up in. And we do not have a solidarity type of thinking framework, right? We have a framework of individualism. Me, mine, got to get some. We fight that on here. I know you are aware of that because we think the only way to make advancements is to have a revolutionary mindset individually for the purpose of your people collectively. So let's hear Dugin from a conversation in an interview, which I thought was sort of typical of what he believes. Okay, so let's hear what he does. He does some prognostication. He does some discussion. He clarifies who the real enemies are. It's very interesting. Here is Dugin. The global structure is between two possible scenarios. The first scenario belongs to the year 2050, in which the complete and irreversible victory for globalization and the unipolar era and the emergence of the post-human era and the destruction of all types of humanity have been achieved. Okay, this would be America winning. Okay. So if America wins, it'll be unipolar, meaning complete global hegemony, full spectrum dominance on the entire planet, which would mean U.S. empire controlled by Israel. Greater Israel would be everything all around you all the time. However, he discusses. The second possible future is that we will win. Now, let's see what he means by we. What does Alexander Dugin mean by we? He says, we will win, everything will change, and a multipolar world will emerge. Russia is currently fighting the real devils of George Soros, the U.S., and Western crazies. Okay, so this is instructive. So either he's echoing the former alt-right current bogeyman George Soros as a concern, or he legitimately understands the threat of NGOs and their open society attacks upon peoples. And he nails the U.S. and he says Western crazy. So this would be like the Atlanticist, NATO, friends of NATO, all the lunatics, as you know. We all know who they are. Everyone controlled by America are the Western crazies. America being controlled by the U.S. and Jews. The Jews in the U.S. Continuing with Dugin, we need to create a new network outside of Western control. Okay, here's the first hint at what Dugin is all about. So he's a counter-individualist. He believes it's in Russia's interest to create a new network outside of Western control. Okay, so far not controversial. We need the continuation of international relations in a successful global trade system. Well, that sounds like more of the same, comma, without Western domination. Okay, so it sounds like what Dugin is saying is, we understand how the world works, but we want to seat at the table, and that means this is not going to be a unipolar world if we have anything to say about it. This is where a thin understanding of Duganism can really get the right wing excited, because anyone who's involved in like counter-Semitism, anti-Americanism, for the reasons we're discussing, they would see this guy and say, ah, that's what I believe in. Okay, but not so fast. This is a thin understanding of Dugan. Okay? Dugan says, I believe that we are on the verge of a global collapse of liberalism. Okay, now they're really cheering for him, right? Everyone else is like, oh my God, we so want that to happen. This dude's prognosticating what I want to happen. Now I am a Duganist. Its main cause is the growth of internal contradictions in the world system. Okay, now he sounds like yours truly, because I've literally discussed how we need to highlight and heighten the contradictions in the U.S.'s participation in the global system. Then he says, and a new global network should be created based on justice and equality. Uh-oh, now we're in trouble. Okay. Justice is good, but equality, that's going to take some doing to fully understand what he means by that. Globalization is nearing its collapse and end. Okay, so that's the end of the quote from the interview that I thought was insightful. Now, if you consider what Dugan said just there in light of the news of the day and the fact that Russia is, in all likelihood, not merely anticipating the collapse of NATO-led globalization and homogeneity, but precipitating the collapse of the U.S. empire worldwide. So we have the cable cut in that Russia engaged in. We have the curtailing of fuel, liquid natural gas, and oil that Russia voluntarily withdrew from agreements. All of this is done to precipitate the collapse of the U.S. empire worldwide. So Dugan explains why, I'm going to show you a clip here, by the way. Dugan explains why civil war, as he calls it, may be the only way to save the West. His theory, by the way, when he says civil war, you'll hear what he means. His theory on the two Wests and what he believes the future holds for the West collectively. So let's try to understand what he's saying when he says the two Wests. Dugan believes that the West is at war with itself, that this thing we call the West is actually involved in a Western civil war or the bifurcation of the West, that there's two Wests. And these two Wests are not only at war with each other, one to be insane, the other to be sane. It's insane versus sane, but they're not just at war with each other. They're also at war with the Eurasian world order, which is that vision of a multipolar world. Okay, this is why Dugan has always been particularly optimistic about the fall of the U.S. empire and the rise of a multipolar world. Okay, so now with that in mind, I'm going to get to this clip very soon. I want to give you some quick background about why I'd be playing you a clip that's just a little bit dated, because frankly, A, Dugan's not said a whole lot recently. B, we're looking at this interview because of the current events in the world, particularly how the Middle East is embroiled in a regional war with the fall of Syria and still with Palestine, Iran, Lebanon, the rest of the resistance axis in the Middle East retaliating against what we know to be the vile state of Israel, okay? Now, the Russia-Ukraine war appears to be nearing its end. Dugan essentially mentions this is what will occur. Yeah, so he prognosticates pretty well. We'll give him that. The American empire appears to be collapsing. No one knows the future for sure. However, either America will face a financial collapse, becoming the third world country, frankly, it's been for a long time, or perhaps racial fissures will erupt and result in balkanization. Dugan's a little bit less, he does a little bit less on race than we would around here, but still, he sees civil war as possibly resulting in a balkanization of U.S. states. Europe, also, by the way, Europe's in complete fucking disarray. The EU and NATO are losing grip on their legitimacy, and in case you didn't realize, in a rules-based order, quote-unquote, legitimacy is power. Okay, no legitimacy, no power. Okay, so the EU, NATO, they're losing. And the Jewish oligarchy of the Western imperialist elite, they're losing their grip on the world as well. So we appear to be witnessing the rise of a new multipolar world with Russia and China leading what I guess they might call a new world order. Dare they call it that, with the BRICS nations at the lead, or I should say the BRICS community. Okay, so we're about to play this. You should know that Dugan, it appears, also was correct regarding his theory of the two Wests, especially in his predictions about more conflicts and wars arising as a result of the tensions between the two Wests at war with itself. And so clearly there's a West that favors Israel and a West that does not. This is part of the two Wests at war with each other. And when you look at the current global situation, his predictions have been pretty accurate, except for the fall of Syria. He never predicted that. And I'd suggest that's not necessarily anyone's fault. I mean, that was a wild card. That was the fact that it happened so quickly was absolutely crazy. Okay, let's share this tab. Oh, no, no. Hold on. Hold on. I have no idea why there'd be no sound. Let me go double. Oh, my God, it's lost sound, you mother.
It's okay. Almost a consensus now. This is the
law. We'll remove him from studio. Let me know if you just heard Dickie Spence. Okay, now I should be able to go press play. That should be good. Hold on a second. I have no idea why it's still no sound. Let me go back over here. Let me just remove altogether. All right. Let me stop sharing. I'm going to stop sharing. And I apologize about that. Yep. Let me go over here to share screen and make sure we pull that up again. Share. Okay. If this doesn't work, I guess I'll just summarize. And that's his daughter up there, by the way. Yep. She's quite lovely. Now she's dead. Compliments of Ukraine security state. Because this is Putin's brain. He's responsible for the thinking about invading Ukraine. Okay, sure. All right. 3, 2, 1.
Because of the West being misrepresented by the globalist elite, some people say it's the Rothschild banking cartel who controls the West. Many people have different opinions. Alexander, when you look at America 20 years from now, how, like, okay, so first question here, how do you think that civil war in the United States will start? Do you think it will be, by the way, I'm not a supporter of Donald Trump. I don't support him, but whether you don't like him or not, he's got a huge following. When you look at Donald Trump right now, do you think it will be him being put in jail, or do you think he'll be assassinated? And how do you think, what do you think the civil war in America would look like? And then after the Civil War, knowing after the West has collapsed and lost its dominance, what do you think America will be in 20 years? Because some people say America should be like a socialist country. So there's a guy called Haas, for instance. He's a, you probably heard of him, Haas, and he believes that America should be a socialist country because he's seen the success that socialism has done with China. So what do you think, like, how do you think the Civil War will start? What do you think it will look like? And where do you see America 20 years from now?
First of all, I would say that we need from the beginning to set the same frames to our vision of the future. So there are two Wests. There is not only one West, but there are two Wests. One West is represented, we can call it actual West. The actual West, West number one, is represented by globalist liberal elite, by Biden's administration, by Blinken, by Democrats, by Rothschild, by Federal Reserve system. So that is the globalist West that could not tolerate not to be unique, not to be dominant, not to be hegemonic, not to be unique capital of the world. So that is globalism. There is nothing against the West. Everything is either West. Other, we should fight against that. So, the global West represented by global elite, not necessarily they should be Anglo-Saxon, French, or German, or Jews. They could be of any color of skin. They could be African, but they should be globalists. So globalists, for example, as Sunak, Rishi Sunak is Hindu, but being Hindu, he is totally Anglo-Saxon, liberal, globalist kind of person. So he may be...
Okay, so what he's saying here, not to be confused, is that he's not advancing the notion like this is a good thing. He's stating that this is a fact of the matter that turns out he's got some real problems when it comes to race, but we'll get to that later. I just don't want him to be misunderstood here. He's not suggesting that that this is a good thing. He's not advancing the notion. He's simply clarifying the concept that globalism, when he refers to the two Wests and the West at war with each other, as well as Eurasianism, what he's saying is that there's a cluster of one of these Wests that is basically like the Mystery Meat Club, the Burger King Club. And they're all getting together, but they run things. He keeps saying Anglo-Saxon because they run things in a sort of Anglo-Saxon temperament while doing what they do within that framework. Okay, this is undeniable that Rishi Sunak, while a mud person, did put on a suit. He would affect like an Anglo-Saxon white person, right? This is undeniable. Rishi Sunak wasn't wearing, rap chains and holding up gang signs with his hands. So this is what Alexander Dugin means, okay, not to be misunderstood.
He's more Anglo-Saxon than many other Anglo-Saxons. So that is not about the ethnicity. Global West, it is about the form of the rule based on liberal ideology, sexual gender politics, artificial intelligence, and technocracy. So there is the West. And this West is in decline and in agony. So it tries to exist and it tries to fight multipolarity at any price. So that.
Okay. So fighting against the unipolarity is the multipolarity at any cost. Okay, there you go. Let's advance.
That demands from us all kind of concentration of all powers, of all potentials, of all resources. We could not artificially create new front line. We just could not afford that. So
he's getting in the weeds a bit. So how about I summarize for you, because I've already watched this and listened, and I admit he's very difficult to listen to. So I'll just tell you basically what he's talking about. Dugin's political alliance, and he does have a sort of political alliance with Putin. Okay, so there's no denying this, but his political alliance with Putin is only because he writes things that Putin also agrees with. Like, Dugin is the philosophical mastermind of an ideologically coherent alternative to Western political hegemony. Like, of course Putin's going to agree with Dugin, okay? So Dugin's political alliance with Putin causes a lot of people to misunderstand him, to write him off as a source of intellectual legitimization for a I've heard this quote, a kleptocratic thug. They call Putin a kleptocratic thug. Jews love to do this. Putin's a kleptocratic thug. It's like, well, look in the mirror much. Who wishes to recreate the Russian Empire? You know, this is the kind of paranoia they discuss. But then that's someone just using Dugin in a thin, misunderstood way to beat up on Putin, who, again, I'm not protecting Vladdy Daddy. I'm just telling you how it works, the dynamic. But Duginism is indeed compatible with Putinism, but it's not reducible to it. So there is more to Dugin than mere Putinism, just to be real clear why we're discussing this, okay? It's more accurate to say that Dugin is the chief philosophical mastermind of an ideologically coherent alternative to Western political modernity, right? What we have, look around today. If you don't like what you're seeing, you're probably looking for someone who has a coherent alternative. And this particular philosopher has one that I would say approximates coherency. And that's just why he can become anchored in the popular mind of the alt-right and a lot of people on the right today even. Okay. So, like it or not, it's a bit of an accomplishment, you know, to come up with such a political theory. And it's not like he's not done the work. I don't think it's the the precise answer, but we'll learn what it is. Doesn't matter what I think. We're putting the facts on the table. Either way, you're gonna be able to learn a great deal about what he believes and maybe even what political modernity is in the West, right? So Alexander Dugin's theory, again, is of the two Wests. The two Wests. That is Western Civil War. The split of the West, which again appears to be a reality. And it seems the Eurasian world, which is the vision of a multipolar world with BRICS as the counter EU, NATO, this reality seems imminent. Okay, just a reminder, BRICS is the intergovernmental organization comprised of, I want to say 10, but maybe it's, either way, it's a handful of countries. It's Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. Like, that's the BRICS, even though it would be BRICSA, I get it. But there's also Egypt, Ethiopia, Indonesia, Iran, and the UAE, which is the United Arab Emirates. Okay, so Dugin makes a point, not only in this interview, but also in many of his writings, that the West, that there's two Wests. There's one West is the actual West. Okay, the actual West, the authentic West. This is not to mean it's a good thing. He's just suggesting that there's an authentic West. So there's a hegemonic, liberal, globalist, Atlanticist, rules-based order of transgender, totalitarian, suicidal capitalism. Okay? The other West is anti-globalist and in favor of multipolarity, or at least a multipolar world. Both Wests are simultaneously in a war with each other and the Russo-Eurasian sphere, okay? And this is the theory. If you find holes in this and you're like, well, I don't exactly see that, that's neither here nor there. We're discussing what the theory, what the political theory of Alexander Dugin is. This is his political theory. So if you don't, if you disagree that there's two Wests, or there's only one West, and you disagree, that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. We're just discussing what Dugin believes. Okay. Now, what is this Russo-Eurasian sphere? What I could gather from his old writings, he's always intended it to mean Russia, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Armenia, and Belarus, okay? And sometimes they flirt with other countries, becoming a part of that sphere. As you know, Georgia's in, Georgia's out. There's a country called Georgia. There's things that are constantly shifting, but this is pretty much Russia, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Armenia, and Belarus, okay? Like, maybe in the next year, by the way, Moldova might end up joining the Russo-Eurasian sphere, for example, because things are really rough over there for the people of Moldova. So, the Eurasian Economic Union, or the the EAEU, in case you've ever heard that anagram, that acronym, I should say, the Eurasian Economic Union is comprised of, dig this, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Armenia, Belarus, and Russia. Okay, so in other words, the Russo-Eurasian sphere, written about for decades, and the traditional countries that always made them up, have been formalized into a Eurasian Economic Union. Now, why do I point this out? Well, because NATO goes about the world adding, like the Borg, they add nations to their memberships, but sometimes these people are discontiguous geographically and ideologically. They should have nothing to do with NATO. You often look at NATO membership and say, why are these people in NATO? Well, that's because it's not an organic collective. I'm making the argument that the Eurasian Economic Union is at least organic. Okay. It makes sense. There's a certain tradition of economic and cultural interaction between Russia, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Armenia, and Belarus. And so that gets formalized. You notice there aren't a lot of other weird countries in there. The Eurasian Economic Union, well, I want to be careful here. It's been relatively successful geopolitically as a project for Russia, which really stands as the Union's uncontested dominant player. In fact, I'm going to go out on a little bit of a limb here, and I'm going to say the EAEU has been pretty successful, actually, because were it not for that economic union, I don't think Russia could have withstood the stress test of the sanctions, right? So I guess the proof's in that pudding. Okay, you can have your problems with the with this Russo-Eurasian sphere of influence, but it is what it is. It seems to have been working. It's a lot more than you can say for the American empire. So what is the goal of the Eurasian Economic Union? Okay, well, they say here, I'll show you a little something. Share this tab, I think. Yeah, here we go. All right, let me shrink it a little. Yeah, so here's the member states resolution. Here's the treaty on the Eurasian Economic Union. So, of course, it's a lot of statecraft. It's the usual. But I think of most importance is it states in the document the main objectives of the EAEU, that's the Eurasian Economic Union, essentially, shall include to create conditions for stable economic development of the member states in order to improve the living standards of their people, the desire to create a common market for goods, services, capital, and labor, within the EAEU, comprehensive modernization, cooperation, and competitiveness of national economies, within the global economy. Okay. So it's aspirational, sure. Are there some problems? I think so. When you're saying there's a common market for labor, I think maybe the Eurasian Economic Union is trying to be a little bit too much like the EU and NATO, but okay, we'll see. Remember that business about the Eurasian Economic Union essentially being the same as the very traditional Russo-Eurasian sphere, right? So you got this collection of countries, Russia, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Armenia, and Belarus, right? So why is Eurasia, I've heard people, NATO Atlanticists argue, why is Eurasia not just one continent? Like, what's up with that? Well, geographers point to political and historical differences between Europe and Asia, and they designate Europe and Asia as separate continents, obviously, whereas geologists often note a lack of a water boundary between the two continents of Europe and Asia. However, this is interesting, a Russian tectonic anthropologist, dig that, Russian tectonic anthropologist, takes into account that both Europe and Asia are on the same tectonic plate and designate them as one continent. And even it goes back to Pangaea, why these peoples going way back have been sharing with each other and interacting. That is Russia, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Armenia, and Belarus. Even if they weren't called those things, then the people of those places were all the way back in the Pangaea separation days there. They were interacting and working with each other. So that's right. I found that interesting, right? Okay. So let's go back to some of the Duganisms of it all. Here is, oh, by the way, Dugan, of course, is people are tell us that, he's a fan of Heidegger. And so that makes Dugan a Nazi, right? This could be promising for us because Heidegger had a fascination with Hitler in 1933. Like, this is what people do. You see what I mean? They find something about Dugan, and then they go ahead and focus on that. So he's a political Rorschach test, okay? We'll get into this a little bit more right now, in fact. So I've shown you how people are still using Dugan as a means for either clickbait or FUD. They're using Dugan, in this case, to tell you he's a part of the WEF or something, which is not true. They're using Dugan here to say, like, oh, look, he's a Trump fan. He's a Trumpist. Others might use Dugan to say, yo, 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 check it. Dugan with Leon DeGrelle, yo. Yeah, okay. Sure, I guess, sure. I'm not suggesting none of that's true. Just suggesting we might want to be more careful about what we look at. For example, let's hear Dugan on race. Let me go make sure we still have audio. Okay, good. We should still have audio. Yes. Okay. What you're going to be hearing is, well, listen, Dugan's about to give a clarification on race. Many in the mainstream media describe Alexander Dugan as a Nazi or right-wing extremist, but Dugan really has typical leftist views on race, as you're about to hear, describing race as a social construct. And in fact, he has that in common with Western liberal elites and many academic Jews, right? So let's go.
Race is something that is not proved theoretically, it was a kind of construction. The idea of the race is not clearly defined.
Okay, so now we have E. Michael Dugan over here. Okay.
And cannot serve as political agenda. I could not think or speak in terms of race. I think that is very, very dangerous and very abhorrent concept.
Do you believe in the existence of races?
Of existence, no. I think that is the other artificial concept as class or individual. race was used historically to call different thing, but as political or scientific concept, it is pure artificial creation.
If a group of blacks move to Russia, learn Russian, become Orthodox, and say they are Russian, would you accept them as Russian?
Yes, exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely. The Russian is about heart, not about the skin. I'm admirer of Boas tradition, anthropology on his, all his line, Franz Boas and Claude Lévi-Strauss. They are, for me, they are masters. I'm following.
So he's also a Strausserite and he follows Franz Boas. Wow.
They're my teachers.
Okay, they're his teachers. Great, 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 great. Well, we're coming back to that. Believe me, we're coming back to that. You just heard in a nutshell how people on the right call each other Duganist to mean, oh, you're a pretend friend of white people and you think race is a social construct. And then you'll hear people in the mainstream media call alt-writers, formerly so alt-writers, current day dissonance or whatever, whatever the far right, whatever they end up being called, call them Duganists. So Dugan is still this very misunderstood, and partially his fault because he says a little of everything for everybody at some time. So he's everything to everybody, therefore he's nothing to anybody. And they'll call him a Nazi because of some adherence to Heidegger. But what you just heard him say is undeniable, and we'll check the chats real quick.
Guys, what's going on?
Okay, we have... What did I miss here? Okay, still no sound. Okay, I'm back at the beginning. Good, here we go. Who is Dugan, the guy that says to give nukes to countries that will use them? Let's hope so. Anglo-Saxon spoke Latin. I bet this fucking idiot thinks they spoke English. He probably does. Straight out of Swamped Inn. They're fighting in the tunnels, getting the kids back. Red Castle, 5TZ, Green Castle, AA7. I see what you did there. Yes. Thought they used hieroglyphs of beans and toast. There you go. That's pretty good. I'm not a part of either West. I am hardcore. Fuck you to government, whether that is for the two Wests or their Eastern Soviet Union bullshit. There you go. Kick Chef suggesting anarchists go to the camps. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll see. We'll see. Let me look at FTJ with you if we could. Interesting. Interesting. Lisa has a thought. Oh, boy. Lots of chats here. Hold on. Scrolling. Okay, here we go. I think past references to the WEF is irrelevant today. True enough, yes, but we were outlining the sort of system of a smear, the systemic smear, the mechanics of a smear. Yes. Lisa from Germany, there is no unified West. Yes, there's at least one bifurcation in the West, if not more. The reality is it is a U.S., Israelish, Jew-infested, dominated, enslaved Western white world. Okay, I don't know about the white world part, but I see what you're saying. 14th column, I like some of what he says, but could take most of what comes out of Russia with a grain of salt. Well, precisely, right? This is the point. The Lubavitchers still have a lot of influence in Moscow. Sure, I think he might be managing them, but you never know. Yeah, that's a good argument against it. I'll give you that. Everyone controlled by Jews are the Western crazies. Exactly. I'm pretty sure that's what he meant, although he mentions Jews in a very sort of, in a glib, offhanded manner, really. 14th column, only three countries in the world do not have world banks. Iran, North Korea, and I forgot the third. Their influence is everywhere. Well, this is true. You get Gaddafi'd if you go against the world, and World Central Bank, that is. Or end up in reconstruction like the southern states. Exactly, Bushmaster 6A. All the lessons are in our history and definitely in world history. So, yeah, it's all about just paying attention. Hello there, a lot of sense. Nice to see you. I'll check the link in a second. Here we go. Oh, Syria is the third, or was the third. Thank you, MSC NorCal. True dat, true dat. The European nations are not at war with Russia. NATO is a tool created by the globalist U.S. Jews. They want to use NATO to pull all of the Western Europe, all of Western Europe into a war against Russia. But the European public opinion is fiercely anti-war. True. I think I'd agree with, yeah, I agree with you more than I do Dugin. But just to be clear, we're outlining Dugin's philosophy and why people are so confused about it still today. And I realized it was important because it seems my old knowledge of Dugin was useful in the NNR chat. So, oh, there we go. We got a back. We got a hello back from Lot of Sense. Okay, actually, Lisa from Germany says these might be the two West Dugans referring to. Yes, there's probably one that's firmly Jew entrenched, and there's I'm certain there's a West that's sort of saying, "Can we return to sanity? Can we stop chopping the dicks off of our kids? Maybe we'll do that. Can we do that?" Yeah. Oh, I like the boomer tech. Thanks, buddy. That's nice. I really don't like this Dugan guy. He's like a 65 year old. Sex change Greta Thunberg. Now, that's funny. That's pretty good. Nice. Lisa from Germany, I don't mean anything by Western Civil War. I was simply referring to Dugin. While most of Dugin's statements are accurate, the goal is to sow chaos in the West. Chaos in the West equals a stronger, more well-positioned Russia. That's true. It's not Dugin causing chaos. It is the Jews. This much is true. And most importantly, did Russia expel the Jews secretly? Well, actually, there were some jailed and expelled Jewish oligarchs, but you'd have to look into the history of that. It's a lot more than we've ever kicked out. In fact, proof that Putin, see, I just did it. The fact that Putin expelled the bulk of his Jewish oligarchs is, for example, the one that got away. Kolomoisky has been this headache ever since. And Kolomoisky is directly responsible for this entire Ukraine mess, for example. So you can't deny the fact that Putin was kicking out Jewish oligarchs. Not so much kicking them out. He tried to jail the bulk of these Jewish oligarchs, keeping one. He kept one. I think I know why. Because if he didn't keep one, you'd probably be dealing with certain realities that he didn't want to deal with at the time. Because, as you said, if the Lubumbovichers are quite strong politically or at least connected, then it makes sense to pick your fights. So you whittle it down to one Jew oligarch, and there's still six other ethnic Russian oligarchs. So it seems Russians are at least in charge of their own country for the most part. Russia is a country first, not ethnic Russians first. True enough, Russian 14th column. Thank you. Harry Holler. Putin did expel most Jew oligarchs. It wasn't a secret, at least not to people who've read and have a cursory understanding. And here's the NPR piece on how Putin conquered Russia's oligarchy. So thanks for finding that. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yeah, he put his foot down. Now, Putin, of course, had the power of the security states. And the security state is something that he directly interfaced with and ended up controlling. He has a lot of allies. I would even say some loyalty. So that goes a long way, and that's how that works. That's how that happened. Yes, I agree. Thank you, buddy. Kickchef says Dugin should fund Davis, or somebody should. Shakes the tree. Shakes the tree. Yeah, how about that? That'd be great, if you're able. Okay. In the meantime, let's get over to some other, speaking of Duganisms. Bing, bada, boom. Close that. Closing that. Oh, by the way, I'm going to show you something real quick. You heard Dugin mention Franz Boas. Okay, here we go. Here's a chapter from... All right. This is from the Kevin MacDonald book. And check out the Boasian School of Anthropology and the Decline of Darwinism in the Social Sciences. Okay, he's about to make, Kevin McDonald's about to make the argument that Jewish influence and the subversive Boasian school of anthropology is what led to the decline of social sciences. So Dugin aligned with Boas means he's not on the right. He can't be. Okay. So there's that tiddly bit. Let me close out some unused browsers here. And we should probably check some of the fundamentals here. Let's check some of the fundamentals. So here's Dugin. You could find him. Plenty about him. The bulk of it's honest. There's a few exaggerations. But none of it paints a person that would be controlling the alt-right from afar. I think the only reason we ever heard of Alexander Dugin is because Richard Spencer's wife was, in fact, a translator for Alexander Dugin. Okay? This is the only reason anyone calls him Putin's brain. Okay? He's not Putin's brain. We'll prove that in a little bit. There we go. Boas was integral to the destruction of the racial sciences. Yes, thank you, Lot of Sense. Exactly. To put a finer point on it, that's precisely what would make him someone who's not in our camp, because you can't follow Boas and be on the fucking far right. It doesn't make any sense. It's not possible. Was he an adherent of Heidegger? Okay, sure. We'll get into that in a little bit. What that means, especially vis-a-vis Heidegger and Nazism. We'll get into that in a little bit. Oh, here's the flag of that Eurasian Economic Union. You might be seeing this more contra NATO. And here's your BRICS peeps. Look at that. They're still active. 2025, they're at it. BRICS versus Atlanticist U.S. Jewish foreign adventurism. Many articles pondering the meaning of Alexander Dugin's Heideggerism. Okay, I mean, what do you want to do about that? Okay, I did a little fun exercise. So this guy's Putin's brain. It must mean Vladimir Putin and Alexander Dugin hang out, right? In fact, let's use this same exact theory to test if Klaus Schwab has any control of Vladimir Putin by way of the by way of that Friends of NATO, or this what was that outfit called? Oh gosh, the Youth. What was it called? Yeah, we'll find it. The Young Leaders. Yes, that was it. Okay. All right, let's get into it. Do we have Klaus Schwab and Vladimir Putin? Okay. Well, those two have met, but Putin was never in the fucking Young Leaders Club, the Young Global Leaders Club, because Putin's experience predates the existence of the Young Leaders Club. So that's not a thing. Here's the Young Global Leaders Club. Okay, got their shit together in 2003. Started under the World Economic Forum in some regard in 1992, which again was postdated from Putin's involvement. So that's retarded. We can get rid of that tab. Klaus Schwab and Vladimir Putin. Okay, that's a shit theory. What about Klaus Schwab and Alexander Dugin? After all, some people might call you a Duginist. Okay, well, you have Facebook posts, X posts, the occasional article. But look at this. Yeah, this is the fucking Tucker interview right here. Other than that, nope, not a big connection between Klaus Schwab and Dugin. Okay, now, Dugin is Putin's brain, right? So these guys must hang out all the time. All the time. So let's do this. Alexander Dugin and Vladimir Putin. Here we go. Nope, that's Photoshop. That's not Dugan. Dugan alone. Dugan. Dugan and his lovely daughter. Dugan. There appear to be no pictures of Dugan and Vladimir Putin even in the same fucking room. Okay. I don't think we would have heard of this guy if Richard Spencer's wife did not translate Dugan. It doesn't appear he's of the level of consequence people think he is. And yet he made it through the alt-right all the way into being interviewed by Tucker Carlson. The left creating a boogeyman out of him, the right creating a boogeyman out of him, and people saying that he's the Putin's brain. Okay. Yeah, maybe he lives in Putin's head, I guess. That's a good one. Okay. So, no young global leaders connection. What else do we have to show you? Oh, no relation to this woman who's pushing... She's pushing... little trackable pharmaceuticals. So each and every pharmaceutical have a little tracking device in it, and then the drug company could know if you swallowed their medicines. Okay, but this is no relation to him. She looks maybe Russian. She's got a bit of the bird phenotype. Might be a Jew. Whatever, I don't really know, but not the same person. Okay? Just for your edification. Okay. Oh, here's that Gramsci figure, who, of course, has been brought up by Dugan, but he's also been brought up by fucking Mayor Pete, Mayor Buttplug. So, meaningless. Meaningless. Let's hear at least the first few minutes, and then I'll tell you more about Dugan, then we'll get into the chats and the socials.
Alexander Dugan is a 62-year-old Russian academic philosopher. He spent his life in Moscow. He was an anti-Soviet dissident as a young man. And now he is famous the world over, in the English language press anyway, as, quote, Putin's brain. But he is not a political figure here in Russia. He is, once again, a philosopher. And his ideas are deeply offensive to some people. In August of 2022, his only daughter was murdered in Moscow when a car bomb killed her. U.S. intelligence says she was murdered by the Ukrainian government, and we take that at face value. But what's interesting is that, once again, Alexander Dugan is not a military leader. He's not a close daily advisor to Vladimir Putin. He is a writer who writes about big ideas. And for this, his books have been banned by the Biden administration in the United States. You cannot buy them on Amazon. Banning books in the United States because the ideas inside are too dangerous. He's often described, again, in the English language press as far right. We'll let you assess. But we wanted to talk to him about some of his ideas, these ideas that are so dangerous that his only daughter was murdered over them and his book's been banned in the United States. And so we're happy to have him join us now. Mr. Dugan, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me and welcome to Moscow.
Of course. Thank you. So we were talking off camera. Actually, we're having a conversation that we were not going to film, just interested to meet you. But what you said was so interesting that we got a couple of cameras and put this together. And my question to you was, what do you think is happening in the English language countries? And I said, all of them, United States, Canada, Great Britain, New Zealand, Australia, all at once decided to turn against themselves. You know, this great turmoil, and some of the behavior seemed very self-destructive. And where do you think, as an observer, that comes from?
So I could just express my reading of that. It demands a little patience. So I think that everything started with individualism. So individualism, that was wrong understanding of the human nature, of the nature of man. When you identify individualism with the man, with the human nature, you cut all the relations to everything else. So you...
This we're going to find ourselves agreeing with him, where he's a counter-individualist, okay? This means that he thinks that the West places far too much emphasis on the individual, such that as he's saying here, they cut off relationships to the larger whole. It's just he doesn't mean larger whole like we do. When we say larger whole, we mean our people. When he's saying larger whole, he means Mother Russia, Greater Russia, which involves Oblast with really brown people, Oblast with Jews. You heard him talk earlier. This would be even niggers in Russia. If they speak Russian and they act like Russians, he's going to embrace them as Russians, okay? So just to be clear, that's what he's saying.
You have a very special idea of the subject, philosophical subject, as individual. And everything started in the Anglo-Saxon world with Protestant reform and with nominalism. Before that, nominalist attitude that there are no ideas, only things, only individual things. So individual, it was the key and is still key concept that was put in the center of liberal ideology. And liberalism, as in my reading, it is a kind of historical and cultural and political and philosophical process of liberation of individual of any kind of collective identity, collective or so that transcends individual. And that started with refuse of Catholic Church as collective identity, of empire, Western empire as collective identity. After that, it was a revolt against a national state as collective identity in favor of...
Okay, so he's doing an E. Michael Jones-style argument, which doesn't make it wrong, of course. E. Michael Jones is quite brilliant. He gets a lot right. So he's making the argument that the Protestant ethic is what led to a type of Western individualism. Okay, so that's where it all is sown from. Okay, you know, fair enough. We'll leave it at that for the moment. What I'd like to do is address the chat who might be reticent to believe that Putin did anything worthy or that he names the Jew or that anything like that. Putin is the least fearful leader of Jews in any country. This does not mean there is no influence of Jews in Russia. That would be childish. But what it does mean is that he jailed Russian oligarchs who were Jews and abusing the Russian people. And one got away. Kolomoisky, and that's why all this fucking Ukraine shit's going on. He's trying to tell, Putin tries to tell the Ukraine people, like, this isn't me. I had to do this. I'm rolling slow, trying to kill as few of you as possible. I'm rolling slow because I want you to be Russian someday, like you've always been. And the Jews have done this to your country. That's Vladimir Putin's message to the Ukrainian people. Here he is.
They will eventually have their comeuppance. Absolutely godless people. Ethnically, many of them are Jews. They do not value things that we value. And when they escape, they will go to get a rest somewhere on a beach. And at some point in the future, the people in Ukraine will remember who did it to them, and that will be something that the Ukrainian people will have a say.
Yeah, so you can see it's a very different approach. It's a very different leadership approach. So that's Vladimir Putin himself speaking to a group of people who had questions. He's fielding questions, and one of them is about, are you responsible for what's going on in Ukraine? And he decided to tell them, no, I'll tell you who's responsible. It's godless people. It's these Jews. They're going to go sit on a beach. And someday they're going to answer to the Ukrainian people. Okay. So it's a lot more than you get out of America. Okay. I don't want anyone necessarily doing a Vladdy Daddy worship, but let's face it. He's probably the strongest leader and most counter-Semitic leader astride the world stage today. Okay, barring any proof we might have that he's an actual Jew, I've seen some passports. Turns out those aren't reliable images. Yes, as with everything, there's a whole lot of FUD, a lot of fear, uncertainty, doubt, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So just like there's people who disagree and say, no, the DNA wasn't from a lizard. they swabbed their neighbor's mouth, and that's why it came back as being the lizard DNA came back as Jew DNA. I don't know. I guess, you know, what do you want me to tell you? What do you want me to tell you?
Well, purely civil society. After that, there was a big fight of the 20th century between liberalism, communism, and fascism. And
okay, great. So he's bringing us up to the post-World War II era. Okay, we get it. I think we get it. Yeah, this is not a major, this should not be a major revelation for anybody, frankly. So this much is true. This much is true. Now, let's bring this back to Dickie Spence, and then we'll get a little bit more into Alexander Dugin. By the way, if you'd like to support more of what you want to see in the world, you should be helping out your boy Davis. That's how that works. That's how it works. Okay, let's bring this up.
Fuck you, Tammy.
Right. Maybe you don't have to say it like that, kid, but, you know, we appreciate the sentiment.
Fuck you, Tammy.
All right, that's it. I heard. We all heard you. We heard you. We heard you. We got it. I know. I was going to say, like, that's enough, kid, and then you were going to say it. I was saying it, and then you were saying it. You're like, oh, my God, Lerman, that's enough. Right? Yeah? No. Right.
Yeah. Right. No.
No. Yeah, really, actually. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
You were going to say it. You were going to say it. I said it, too.
yeah. You were going to say it, and then I said it, and then I said it, too. Yeah. But Davis, Putin shook hands with Netanyahu. Yes, that's the level of evidence you'll find. Picture of Putin with Chabad Lubavitch, therefore Putin owned by Chabad, or even better, Putin, therefore Putin Jew. Well, listen, a serious leader astride the world stage is going to have to, shall we say, glad hand and manage. You have to manage the power sectors in your country. Okay, there's also a polite balance that can occur between someone in a leadership position and those, frankly, beneath them. You don't want to let people beneath you think they're beneath you. Okay? You want them to think, you want them to know they're beneath you, but you don't want to emphasize it. So you want them to think that we are partners in making a greater Russia, shake their hand, and then they go back to their shuls and they say, aha, we got this fucking Putin guy under our thumb. I'm pretty sure that's how it works, because Putin's security services, let's put it this way, if they can get rid of oligarchs, and sure, Kolomoisky got away, but the rest of them did not. So if they can get rid of oligarchs, something tells me you could come for Chabad fucking Lubavitch in the middle of the night. So it seems everyone is playing nicely. Let's put it that way. It's a lot more than you can say about America, where you've got this rotting corpse of a country being animated by Kaikari with their voodoo incantations to make us go die for Israel one last time. No thanks. I'll take whatever you call that in Russia. I would prefer that, whatever that's called. You want to call it, what, B'nai B'rith control, fucking Chabad Lubavitch control. I don't know what you're going to call it, but yeah. It's just like, we don't know what to call it. We don't know what to call this either. Tim fucking Pool. It's the last thing I wanted to see, but hey, this is a PSA for the ladies.
I assure you, my friends, this is not fake news. This is reporting from the New York Post. And right now, top men are sitting behind the scenes saying, damn it, man, find me what caused this so we can make $50 billion overnight. Okay. And you clicked the video, so you know what it's about. For those listening on the audio podcast, teens' breasts grew to triple G cup size following COVID vaccination. Concerns not adequately addressed. I'm not going to bury the lead. I'll tell you exactly what the story claims. There is a report, a study that tracks this woman whose breasts started to grow rapidly after getting the vaccine and then rapidly more after her second dose. Now, maybe it's a coincidence, but it really does seem like it correlates. There have actually been other reports that women who got vaccinated saw their breasts begin to grow. probably an extremely rare side effect. But the point of the story is there are scientists and researchers saying if we can figure out how an injection made breasts grow, you would eliminate the breast implant plastic surgery industry overnight. And women would just get whatever medication this was that made the boobs grow. Now, that being said, it's possible it's unrelated, but I will stress it really does, according to this story, appear that it was the vaccine that caused the breast growth. Let me read you this story, and I don't know. I'm sure YouTube will get mad about it. I do have to blur the images because they straight up show this woman's mass. They're saying she developed gigantomastia, it's called. So apparently she had like a B cup, got the vaccine, her boobs started to grow rapidly, got a second dose, and they just massively grew very, very quickly. When they removed some of the tissue, they actually took a cross section to examine how this could have happened. And it's a wild story. But, you know, bringing you only the most important news. And again, I'll stress there are a lot of people who a lot of women have reported this. I just don't think enough stories emerged in this reporting that it actually gained traction. Like it's a rare side effect, I guess. But here's the story from AOL, carrying New York Post. A 19-year-old woman's breast stunningly grew from a B cup to a triple G in 6 months following her Pfizer COVID-19 vaccination. In what researchers are calling a first of its kind case, the unidentified healthy young woman reportedly started experiencing the rapid growth 1 week after getting vaccinated in September 2022, and it worsened after a second dose. Quote, the patient believed the vaccine caused her breast growth. However, her concerns were not adequately addressed by her primary care physicians, leading to mistrust in the healthcare system. Toronto-based researchers wrote last month in the Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery Global Open Journal. They're going to say the study authors pointed to so-called Pfizer boob job phenomenon. Some women claimed their breasts grew after getting the shot, but there's no evidence that was the case. The researchers report that while lymph node swelling is a known side effect of COVID-19 vaccination, changes to the structure or density of breast tissue are exceedingly rare. What is that? Exceedingly rare. That means they know it's a side effect. The study author said there's only been one published case detailing distinctive breast changes after the Pfizer booster, and it was a noticeable lump. This woman did not have a lump. The woman was found to have a very rare condition in which a benign lesion called a PASH causes extreme breast enlargement. Fewer than 20 cases have ever been documented. This case is the first to demonstrate a temporal association between the PASH-associated gigantomastia and a vaccine. The Post reached out to Pfizer for comment. The woman reported feeling a tingling in her breasts before they grew. Doctors didn't notice hormonal changes in her blood work and prescribed her steroids and antibiotics to no avail. Her breasts stopped growing after 6 months, and she underwent reduction surgery 5 months later, according to the case report. She lost a lot of blood during the procedure, which limited the amount of breast tissue surgeons could remove. She has double D breasts and may get another reduction to return to her normal size. So let me get more into this. Apparently, she's a B cup. She gets the vaccine and then feels a tingling sensation, followed by about a week later, her breasts begin growing. When she told her doctors, they said, doesn't seem like this is anything. You're clear for a second dose of the vaccine, which she got and worsened her gigantomastia. I know it's a silly story, but I don't know. I think it's worth reporting anyway. The Toronto study authors are calling for further research to see if there's a link between the COVID-19 vaccine, PASH, and rapid breast growth. I wonder why. More than 13.6 billion COVID-19 doses have...
This dude's really annoying. So, yep, okay, it's a thing. It's a thing. It's a thing. Surprisingly. It's also a Nog thing. So when they say teen, as it turns out, it's a Nog teen. Ugh. There's nothing. The only thing more gross than a Nog would be a Nog with gigantic flappy boobs. Pretty fucking gross. The Nog teen. Okay. Unbelievable. No thanks. No thanks. Okay, why isn't this Daily Star coming up? Oh, well. Yeah. Oh, here's an even more blurred version. Here we go. It's kind of easier to look at. The blurred version, much easier to look at. Yeah. What are the effects on asses, Kick Chef at? Right, we could have a whole race of Scarlett Johansson's. Exactly. Yes. We have a medication for the medication side effects. It's fine. And on it goes. That's right. Yes. We brought in a frog to eat the fly. We brought in this to eat the that. Next thing you know, there's a lion in your house eating your children. That's what we do. I need the unblurred photos for research, Serbian Bull says. It is a nigger, yes. So no thanks. It's fucking disgusting. Tim Pool. Oh, God. Serbian Bull's dad would lose his mind. No. You got to straighten your dad out, bro. Seriously. Oof. Okay, she's pretty gross, and Tim Pool's pretty shitty. By the way, we should probably address it. Outcry as Arizona tattoo shop inks a girl 9 who wanted, oh God, it's not coming up here. You can see it just through the fucking allow ads thing. There's the kid wanted a picture of Trump on her neck. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. This country's fucking weird. All right. Didn't we also have serious news? Oh yes. Oh God. Wind whipped fire in L.A. prompts evacuations in Pacific Palisades. Well, all right. Hopefully no one we love is involved in this nonsense. Jesus. Ah. Mean Billy Boo. You could still buy Negroes here, but only for a night. I get what you did there, Serbian Bull. That's, I see. No one really wants to buy Negroes for a night. Yeah, it's something I don't want to think about, frankly. Let's not think about it. Oh, brother. Okay, going back to the Dickie Spence of it all. Right? We promised you some of that, didn't we? Yes, here we go. Let's hear Richard Spencer's sort of exaggerated take on Dugan. All things Dickie Spence are really going to annoy you. This is going to annoy you.
What are you guys feeling like?
I do Dugan, Roger.
Okay. Okay. Let me just read this. I saw this on New Year's Day, and all of it is not surprising if you know Alexander Dugan's thoughts, but I was taken aback due to the fact that he's actually engaging in criticism of Russia. For the last 2 years, it's been Russian messianism and demonization of Ukraine, etc. And I felt like this was actually a very sound comment. So the SMO final break with the West, the special military operation is SMO. The special military operation changed a lot. As the beginning of military actions in Ukraine finally contradicted the liberal dogma, democracies do not fight against each other. And if they do, one of them is not a democracy. And the West easily identified who? Of course, Russia, and specifically Putin. Thus, the liberal West finally refused to consider us liberals. Now, he's going back to a lot of these democratization theories that had a lot to do with the Bush administration and the Second Gulf War, of if you can just make a country a real democracy, it will not fight another democracy and is unlikely to go to war, et cetera. I mean, this is just kind of heady nonsense. And I think also doesn't fully understand what a democracy is. A democracy means rule by the people. Schmidt was correct in understanding that how rule by the people is articulated is ambiguous or could go in a number of different ways. A dictator who rules on behalf of the people is as much of a democrat, maybe more of a democrat, than a parliamentarian who feels like it's his job to contradict the people at every turn.
Actually, that's where the book Hitler Democrat comes from. But most importantly, that's I think Richard Spencer misinterprets Schmidt a little bit there. So the Schmidian takeaway is really that even in a democracy, you could use the Schmidian perspective on power. Schmidt has a perspective on power. He has much less to say about democracy versus something else. So Schmidt's idea of power is, to put it simply, power is he who grants the exception. Okay. So you can have this sort of power in a democracy, just as you can in a national socialist country with an overlay of fascism, or some argue fascism is just right-wing national socialism, right? So it's all about power is exercised by way of who grants the exception. I know a lot of sense. I've thought the same thing. Is Greg Johnson actually just Richard Spencer? They literally sound the same. And I'm thinking they might actually suck the same penises. Not to be disgusting, I'm just saying. But I probably shouldn't say that. I have no proof that Richard Spencer's gay. So listen, I don't know that Richard Spencer sucks penises or whatever. I'm just saying I have it on good information. He's had a few in his mouth. Let's put it that way, for what that's worth.
And I mean, Schmidt's criticism of parliamentarism, it's a weird word to say in English, is that it's precisely not democratic. And
I say words wrong all the time, Richard. That's not what makes you gay. In fact, the word is parliamentarianism, which is why it's a hard word to say. You said the word wrong.
The notion of a representative who is going to engage in endless discussion in a parliamentary body is anti-democratic on some basic level. I mean, that was his critique. And I think it stands. So when people say, you know, are they a democracy or not, what they really mean is, do they have a parliamentary representative system? Are they capitalist to some degree? I think that's probably also baked in the cake. And also, are they liberal in the sense that will they, at the end of the day, accept gay rights? At the end of the day, will they offer transgendered surgery?
Okay, this is interesting because now Richard Spencer has hit on something that's actually important. So we discussed the idea of democracy not really being the problem. I mean, none of us here like democracy, I don't think, but democracy itself is not the problem. You could have democracy just fine in a closed society full of white people, and I think that would be a very good society to live in. You could probably have almost any form of government you'd like to try in a country full of white people that are similar to each other instead of the dissimilar multicultural morass, this failed fucking experiment that we call America and, frankly, the modern West, which is no wonder. If maybe Dugin's right. Maybe the West is at war with itself. It's at the very least, the West is so internally incoherent that it would, by all accounts, give every impression that it's at war with itself, even if it's not literally at war with itself. But we continue, Richard Spencer, on the aspects of an open society is what he's discussing here. Okay, so it isn't just that it's democracy or liberalism even. I think you could have a white society, an all-white society, full of white people, no Jews, and frankly, you could have democracy with lots of liberalism, and it would probably all work out. So I think what Richard Spencer means to say here are the hallmarks of open societies, not necessarily democracies, right?
At the end of the day, are they going to promote culture that is fragmenting and degenerate, et cetera? At the end of the day, are they going to adopt a sexual revolution? That's what it means to be liberal. Anyway, I'll go on. But it seems we still want to prove at all costs, no, we are the real liberals. You are not liberals. You have deviated from liberal democracy, supporting the Nazi regime in Kiev. We remain true to liberal dogmas. After all, they include anti-fascism. And that's what we are fighting against, Ukrainian fascism, as required by liberal ideology. So we forget that the expressed justification from Vladimir Putin was not to take over Ukraine. It was a denazification effort of their government led by Jew in Zelensky. So,
hey, this is very difficult to believe that Richard Spencer is taking this the way he's taking it. Frankly, it's kind of concerning. I mean, this is the first I'm sharing with you, the first thing I ever heard from Richard Spencer that made me say more than just he's gay or more than just he couldn't be our leader. This made me really start thinking about Richard Spencer as subversive, because if he's genuinely misunderstanding this point, it means Richard Spencer has no business involved in political analysis for anyone. He should not be considered a thought leader. No one should be listening to Dickie Spence. If he does not understand that Vladimir Putin talked about the Azov battalion and defeating Nazism, that was counter propaganda. Okay. It's messaging. It is not state policy. It's not written anywhere in Russian state policy that the reason for invading Ukraine has nothing to do with NATO. We're just there to defeat Nazis and defeat Nazism. Okay, that line of thought, that messaging, that specific messaging is tailored as a big old fuck you to NATO. That's why he says it. It's not because the actual Russian state policy has nothing to do with NATO. Richard Spencer actually fucking believes this. I mean, if he does not understand that leaders, world leaders, can do counter propaganda. They can run lines of narratives that work against the interests of their enemies. Sometimes he'll say one thing to one person, and believe it or not, Richard, Putin will say another thing to another person because he knows what motivates those two different persons or groups of people to become allied with the ideology that Russia's advancing. That's why he does it. It's very cynical, I know, but actually, this is the way the world works. It's not because Vladimir Putin shivers personally. He's not scared when he sees a Swazi. It's because he knows the message of, oh, we're there to defeat Nazism, works as excellent counter-propaganda against the NATO interests, fueling, obviously, fucking NATO, knocking on his door. Okay, so we'll continue.
You know, a lot of people just looked over this, but I think it was fascinating, and it does have a certain ring in common with anti-fascist efforts of the Bush administration and overturning the dictator Saddam Hussein and blah, blah, blah. I'll go on. I'm not saying that everybody in the Russian government thinks this way, but certainly many do. I think that's also correct. They fervently oppose patriotic reforms, throwing themselves into the breach to ensure sovereignty does not touch the most important thing, ideology. All right. I like where Dugin is going with this. Antonio Gramsci called hegemony the control of the liberal worldview over the superstructure.
Okay, here's the Gramsci reference. Okay, so this is something Dugin will do. Dugin, again, pulling from leftist radical ideologues and thinkers. Okay, Gramsci is just that sort of fella. Okay, we've pointed him out earlier. Gramsci was someone that Mayor Buttplug, Pete Buttigieg, was an adherent of, to give you some idea of the kind of shit that this Dugin is into.
Especially culture, knowledge, thought, and philosophy. And this hegemony is still in the hands of liberals in Russia. This is actually pretty fascinating because he's being self-critical. It's an interesting rejoinder to a lot of the stuff that we hear from the Western press about how, you know, Russians have completely gone over the edge and they're all a bunch of fascists and it's a Z ideology. What he's saying is that it's actually not, and that liberals are still hegemonic, ideologically speaking, and that's the most important thing. And I agree with him. This is kind of my criticism. A lot of these guys I've interacted with, and they're focused on, like, you know, these foreign actors, or, you know, do we have the technology to do this? It's what you fundamentally think. Like, how you understand your future, how you what you think is up and down and right and wrong in your society that ultimately matters.
Okay, but all Dugin's pointing out by saying that there's a liberal hegemony within Russia is that, you know, the phone call is coming from within the house. Okay, so Russia has their subversives as well. That's really all he's saying. I think Richard Spencer just made much more about it than he should have. Anyway, here, Russia uses the term, this is Harry Holler, Russia uses the term anti-Nazi denazification as a propaganda tactic and to perpetuate their own World War II hero mythology domestically with the Russian people. Yeah, I completely forgot that aspect of it. It also plays well in Russia because the bugaboo for Russians is, of course, the only country that ever literally pushed Russia's shit in, which was German Nazis. Okay? So, yeah, that is a very good point. It plays well with the Russian people. Oh, and it speaks to that deep well of mythology that the Russian people have surrounding how they were the good guys in World War II, remember? Right? So don't think Dugin's not trapped in that. Of course Dugin's trapped in that. And he's not our guy, but he's also not the the satanic evil people make him out to be. He's Dugin's trying to say a little of everything to everybody so that everyone in the diversified oblasts of Russia, everyone could find something to bring them into the Russian collective. He's like the ultimate multiculturalist. That's what I'm telling you. Yeah.
Ideology. We still deal what you think before you start thinking. Ideology. Quoting again.
Okay, that's actually useful. Something else useful that Richard Spencer said. So Richard Spencer's defining ideology as what you think before you start thinking. So that's interesting. I've never heard it put that way. So we're going to give Richard credit for that. How's that sound? Yeah, let's give him credit for that. Why not? Okay. By the way, it's a little bit excruciating to continue, so we won't, but he mentions Heidegger. He mentions Heidegger and Nazism, of course, which needs to be mentioned. There's some incongruities there. Obviously, just because someone might follow an aspect of Heidegger does not make them a Nazi because Heidegger flirted with Nazism. Vice versa, does that make Heidegger more based? I suppose that's the calculation. Yep, that's probably the calculation. Right? Yeah. Well, let's explain a little more, then we'll get back to the chats, and then we're going to get into some news of the night, okay? So I've already mentioned, by the way, about Dickie Spence's wife being a translator for Dugin. Again, I think this is the only reason anyone's ever heard of Dugin. As you've seen from his theories, he says a little bit of nothing. He says a little bit of something. He's discussing this fourth political theory. He's discussing an ideological alternative to Western practical political modernity. And yet he also, by the way, this is the same exact Dugin who has said there is no ideology. Okay? So I'm just telling you, this is the kind of guy you're dealing with. So someone can find Dugin saying there is no ideology. Someone else can find Dugin saying our ideology is counter-Western and fourth political theory. Okay? Yeah, it appears he did throw his wife down the stairs. Something like, yeah, I saw all that. That was a mess, but it seems he's got a bit of a temper there. Yeah, that's problematic too, by the way. So you don't want leaders like that either. So you don't want them to be big teddy bears. Like, I'm not saying I'd be a good leader, but, yeah, if you get a guy who doesn't mind seeing beautiful things broken and he's running things for you, I don't know, guys. I think the Russian broad was his first wife. First wife is the one thrown down the stairs. I can't really speak about anything to do with the latest wife, but anyway, yeah, I don't think he can be really trusted is the long and the short of it. Yeah. So I guess the question is, there are some people who ask, like, why do white people give any credence at all to this Warsaw Pact light fucking Dugin? He was born and raised under the yoke of communism, sure. And now he just wishes to be on a leash, according to some. That's how some will criticize him. I've literally read that. Oh, Dugin wants to be back on a leash of communism. It's like, well, he doesn't exactly advance communism. Just because he's counter-individualist does not make him a traditional communist. Anyway, listen. Dugin is a complicated figure, but I think some of that's contrived. I guess that's my point. I mean, Dugin was writing for decades. I made the point that there is no ideology. He's also written, dig this, that a sixth column of Russian liberals is strong enough to justify his fourth political theory of Eurasianism. We should do everything to destroy the sixth column of Russian liberals. He's also talked about how Putin is not 180 degrees from 1990s liberalism, but rather 90 degrees. And that he, Dugin, as an anti-liberal, rebellious Russian adherent, who still maintains allegiance to this weird, he uses this word, a type of globalist, dig this, T-I-A-N-T-I-A-N-Z-I-A, Tianzia. This is the word he uses. I looked it up. It turns out it's a fucking Chinese term that literally means all under heaven or global dominion by man. Okay, well, this means that he, Dugin, if you're to take this Chinese term of all under heaven seriously, that Dugin believes in a type of dividing of everything into spheres of influence by way of a Heideggerian struggle. Like, here's something Heidegger said to give you some insight. Every man is born as many men and dies as a single man. So in other words, Heidegger, you can see, is obviously where either Dugin gets or finds a lot of resonance in Heidegger's type of counter-individualism. And it's a lot like Fight Club, according to Heidegger, that like when you die, you have a name. Every man is born as many men, but dies as a single one. Like, okay, so when you die, you get that son, then you have a name. Before that, you're a part of the great many, the collective. This is the exact inverse of hardened American Western individualism, right? Okay. Maybe a little bit more on Heidegger. Heidegger's philosophy focuses on human experience of existence in the world, okay? Both as an individual, but mostly within a social context, okay? So when you heard Dugin talking to Tucker about this misunderstanding of the individual in the social context, that the Western mind sees individuals as primary, whereas the Russian mind sees individuals as existing within a social context. What this will tell you is that Heidegger and Dugin are not individualists, okay? In Heidegger's book, Being in Time, he says, everyone is the other and no one is himself. So this is his I Am Spartacus type of, you know, unity of oppression type of narrative. Okay, this was written under the yoke. And ironically, for Dugin, an adherent of Heidegger, Heidegger in 1933 was a little obsessed with Hitler, maybe even bewitched by Hitler. Some could say. Scholars noted about Heidegger's last meeting with Hitler in 1933, quote, it's just like 1914. Again, this deceptive mass intoxication. Okay, so, of course, everyone knows that Hitler had this ability to intoxicate people he shared a room with. That's nothing new, but I think he did it through the pure power of his fucking awesomeness. Heidegger spent time as a rector. Believe it or not, like his predecessor, Heidegger refused to display the anti-Jewish poster art. So this is interesting. So Heidegger loved Hitler, but failed to refuse to display anti-Jewish propaganda. Heidegger was also the spearhead of the conservative revolution promoted in the beginning by Nazis and later condemned by Nazis. So again, a mixed bag. And according to associates of Heidegger, he called for not the subordination of the university to the state, but precisely the reverse, and did indeed seek to protect students from indoctrination by the crasser form of Nazi propaganda. So again, didn't want to put up counter or anti-Jewish poster art. So again, doesn't seem like he's our guy if he's following Heidegger, right? On Eurasianism and views on geopolitics. So Dugin has theorized the foundation of a Euro-Asian empire. Okay. Now, we don't have to approve of this. This, again, we're discussing this conceptually. This is what Dugin has theorized and advanced as an ultimate end of what he does ideologically. Even though I know he said there's no ideology. All right. He wants to build, he wants to see, he wants to be the map maker for a Eurasian empire capable of fighting the US-led Western world. Okay. Now, to show you what a mixed bag Dugin is, Dugin, in this regard, he was the organizer of the first leader for the ultra-nationalist National Bolshevik Party. That's the name of it, National Bolshevik Party, from 1993 to 1998. And then the National Bolshevik Front and also the Eurasian Party, which then became a non-governmental association. So Dugin's got this thing called the Eurasic ideology. And this ideology, you can see, aims at the unification of all Russian-speaking peoples in a single country. So, knowing everything I just told you, you can understand how people would sometimes characterize him as fascist by some critics, populist by other critics, Bolshevik by other critics. In the 1990s, Dugin's work at the National Bolshevik Front included research into the roots of national movements and activities of supporting esoteric groups in the first half of the 20th century. Ah, so now we have Dugin the fascist, Dugin the populist, Dugin the Bolshevik, and Dugin the mystic. He's everything to everyone. See what I mean? Do you see what I mean? Did you ever hear this term, Hyperborean theory? Okay, well, that was Dugin's book, right? Dugin was largely endorsing this guy named Wirth's ideas, which, interesting, was sort of the beginning of the foundings of Eurasianism or Eurasian theory. Okay. So yeah, the Dugin book is essentially like an extensive summary of this Wirth researcher in any language, really, but there you go. Oh, this is interesting too. Dugin also promoted Wirth's claim, remember the same Wirth with the Hyperborean theory in the 1993 book by Dugin, promoted Wirth's claim to have written a book on the history of the Jewish people in the Old Testament called the Palestina Book, B-U-C-H, which could have changed the world had it not been stolen. Okay, so in other words, if the country of Palestine had not been stolen, these could have been a people that changed the world. Okay, well, this is not going to have you sitting well with the Jews, obviously, if you're Dugin. At the end of the Second Chechen War, Dugin was requested by the Chechens to come and negotiate. Okay, so this shows his close ties to, of course, Kazakhstan, Nazarbayev. He's personally interfaced with the ambassadors of Iran and Syria. And Dugin's ideas, by the way, particularly those on a Turkic-Slavic alliance, dig this, in the Eurasian sphere. Listen to this language. A Turkic-Slavic alliance in the Eurasian sphere. So here is Dugin competing for Turkey with NATO. Interesting. That's interesting. Dugin's Eurasianist ideology has been linked to his adherence to the doctrines of the traditionalist school. So trad. Dugin's traditional beliefs are the subject of a book by a fellow named Heiser. And this has got a great title. You'll love this. The American Empire Should Be Destroyed. Alexander Dugin and the Perils of eschatology, immanentized eschatology. There it is. So you get to learn all about the insane, crazy the crazies of the West, as he put it. There you go. By the way, Dugin also advocates for a Russo-Arab alliance, so this will also not sit him well with the Jews. Not at all. Let's listen. I'll give you a quote from his Foundations of Geopolitics in 1997. In principle, Eurasia and our space, the Russian heartland, remain the staging area of a new anti-bourgeoisie, an anti-American revolution. The new Eurasian empire will be constructed on the fundamental principle of the common enemy, the rejection of Atlanticism. See, for those of you who think I've made that word up, I still get emails. You're making it up, third worldist. Atlanticist, there's no such thing. Well, I don't have to tell you, people who have had political discussions know the word Atlanticism. The rejection of Atlanticism, strategic control of the USA, and the refusal to allow liberal values to dominate us. This common civilizational impulse will be the basis of a political and strategic union. Okay, so now you're reading that, you can see how the alt-right would find resonance in these ideas. Right? You can understand that. And this is where the appreciation of Dugin came from. The Kremlin invited Dugin to speak at its anti-orange rally in Moscow in 2012. There, Dugin addressed tens of thousands with this message. Dig this, by the way. He talks about Syria and Iran being on the agenda. Okay. Who's their agenda? It's on their agenda. Dear Russian people, the global American empire strives to bring all countries of the world together under its control. Well, you're mostly right there. They intervene where they want, asking no one's permission. They come in through the fifth column, which they think will allow them to take over natural resources and rule over countries, people, and continents. They have invaded Afghanistan, Iraq, and Libya. Syria and Iran are on the agenda, but their goal is Russia. We are the last obstacle on their way to building a global evil empire. Well, this much is true, actually. You can't have world dominance unless you also control Russia, right? I think that much is true. But this does not mean that this dude is a fascist or a mystic or a Democrat or a Bolshevik. He's a person of ideas, and as such, people treat him like a Rorschach test. I think you're digging what I'm saying. He's everything to everyone. There are even psychopathological analyses of Dugin's texts. Okay, so there's people who've decided Dugin is a psychopath. Again, he's everything to everyone. Therefore, he's nothing to anybody. And that's why I figure we get into that tonight to clarify what is Duginism, what does it mean when someone calls you a fucking Duginist, and we got to explore some of the parallel ideas that affect us today. So that's why we did what we did. Now, Keir Starmer's response to Elon Musk, let me make sure we share this tab and bring it up. Do we have audio? Yes, we should have audio. Okay. Now, I'm not going to play the actual audio. I'm going to mute that tab. Mute this motherfucker, because I have the audio, which has been enhanced. And Keir Starmer looks like a short guy. Is he a short? Is he a manly? I don't know. But anyway, you guys should probably support Davis Lerman. I heard he puts in a lot of time, they say. That's what they tell me. I don't know if it's
true. Fuck you, pay me.
Well, you could be nicer about
it. Fuck you, pay me.
Okay, if you insist.
Fuck you, pay me.
There you go. So, let me pull this up. I know I have this somewhere. I have it somewhere. Here we go. Oh, we found it. Here we go. Okay, Keir Starmer's to tech. Yeah. Keir Starmer's speech about, let me tell you what you're about to hear. He calls out, he does this response to Elon Musk calling out his part in the covering up of the rape gang scandal. I want you to listen to it carefully. and think about what he's saying when he's up here. We couldn't hear it until I'm about to play a way you can hear it. Serbian Bull, thanks for the support from Mr. Lertleman. Thanks, buddy. Here it is. So Starmer doesn't seem to know why Tommy Robinson's in jail. He seems to be, when you listen to this, you're going to hear him referring to a previous conviction from 6 years ago, in which itself was certainly a politically motivated reason to put Tommy behind bars. Not that I'm a big Tommy fan, but sometimes he's put behind bars wrongly. But anyway, that he mixes that up. Starmer dismisses valid critiques of his leadership and handling of the rape gang scandal. He dismisses these critiques as merely the playbook of the far right, of course. He did the same thing with the fear and frustration that boiled over after the fucking Southport massacre, where, if you remember, a Muslim radical stabbed 8 children, which I think killed 4 of them. Was it killed 3 or 4? Anyway, Keir Starmer has no sympathy whatsoever for the English working class, and he often stigmatizes them with the far right label as outside the bounds of consideration. Oh, they don't fit within the proper, this little index card I have you can fill out. Oh, no, we can't fit the words working people, working white people here. You'll hear Starmer play the victim for both himself and others. And instead of accepting that he and his government have done wrong, he insists that the claims, of course, that there's been threats sent. Oh, he's being threatened. He doesn't have to tolerate any criticism of his handling of the rape gangs. So he does the old tisk tisk. He's going to shake his finger at the people now that we can finally hear this fucking thing. So let's hear it in 3, 2, 1. Here we go.
Those who are cheerleading Tommy Robinson are interested in justice. They're supporting a man who went to prison for nearly collapsing a grooming case, a gang grooming case. These are people who are trying to get some kind of vicarious thrill from street violence that people like Tommy Robinson promote. And those attacking Jess Phillips, who I'm proud to call a colleague and a friend, are protecting victims. Jess Phillips has done 1,000 times more than they've even dreamt about when it comes to protecting victims of sexual abuse throughout her entire career. And so just as I took on the criminal justice system and the institutions when I was chief prosecutor, I'm prepared to call out this for what it is. We've seen this playbook many times, whipping up of intimidation and threats of violence, hoping that the media will amplify it. And Jeff Phillips does not need me or anybody else to speak on her behalf. But when the poison of the far right leads to serious threats to Jeff Phillips and others, then in my book, a line has been crossed. I enjoy the cut and thrust of politics, the robust debate that we must have, but that's got to be based on facts and truth, not on lies, not on those who are so desperate for attention that they're prepared to debate themselves and their country. So this government will get on with the job of protecting victims, including child sexual abuse, mandatory reporting, accelerating the processes. But what I won't tolerate is this discussion, debate, based on lies, without calling it out. What I won't tolerate is politicians jumping on the bandwagon simply to get attention. When those politicians sat in government for 14 long years, tweeting, talking, but not doing anything about it. Now so desperate for attention that they're amplifying what the far right is saying. So that's what I say about Jess Phillips. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, there you have it. You've heard six-pointed Starmer saying the government will, quote, get on with the job of protecting victims, including child sexual abuse, mandatory reporting and accelerating the process. That's what my notes say. I think that's what he said. But this would, none of this would have been necessary if it wasn't for their own attempt to cover up the story and dismiss the victims in the first place, right? So this is just like in America. They hand wave. They don't have any refutation for the actual accusations of. Yeah, their malrepresentation, the fact they despise us. They hate us, and it's pretty fucking clear. So he's up there trying to displace the responsibility, which should rest on his shoulders, obviously. And why is any of this even being discussed? Well, because, Elon Musk and Tommy fans are asking questions, and so are many in the general public. So, yeah. I guess we can thank Elon and Tommy at least for sort of making a real stink about how this has been handled. Starmer, by the way, in November, he gamed everybody, came out and spoke about how, oh, he's totally reversing immigration. Yeah, it's all going to work out. And now this is what he's doing lately. It seems like that wasn't genuine. That was a way of managing, sort of handling public perception. Anyway, so I guess it's we're glad to not be alone. At least we can see the UK has disgraceful representation. And don't you love the way he did that? The way he was like pretending, he was acting like he's acting as if preventing the rape of children and bringing justice to those victims of gang rapes is like a fucking partisan issue. Okay, so only the far right would be concerned with that, right, Keir? Okay, you're so trapped in your fucking race ideology. These are true enemies of white people, by the way. Okay, I don't care if every person raped by rape gangs was not white. The fact is, there were white kids done wrong. There were white girls done wrong. And it's not about a fucking bandwagon. It's not about a fucking far right playbook. These fucking douchebags would rather not just do what they have to do. So you're going to get the rope. That's how it's going to work. There's been legitimate crimes against our people, and we're seeing an example. It's not just in America. They do the same fucking hand-waving, the same managing, the same fake fucking policy announcements. Okay, he's not going to go get on with the job of protecting victims, quote-unquote, including child sexual abuse, quote-unquote, because when browns do it to whites, no one gives a fuck. That's just the fucking, that's the fact of the matter. I don't want it to be that way. I'm just explaining why they're going to get the blowtorch, the pliers, and the smelling salts. That's what's coming for, that's what's coming for you. Just so you're aware, that is what's coming for you. All right, let's go see FTJ, how they're doing over there, shall we? Let's check on the F to the T to the J, y'alls. Okay.
Guys, what's going on?
Okay, well, we have over at FTJ, we have Harry Holler still kicking it live with links, which I appreciate, about Jewish oligarchs getting their shit pushed in as they should. Bushmaster 6A, IMO, there's no such thing as social science. It should be called social manipulation or communism. That's actually more accurate. Social science. Did you ever meet one of these people, by the way, who like they went to college or maybe even later in life, they went and got their social work degree? Social work has got to be the fakest fucking, first of all, it's the fakest accreditation I've ever heard. It's the fakest fucking college degree I've ever heard of. Social work. Oh, I have a degree in how to distribute goodies only to brown people. Oh, well, pretty sure you don't need a degree for that. You just got to hate white people. And P.S., U.S. has already got that down, so don't know why you're in training. Yes. In Europe, Dugin is well known as an influential figure in Russia. Likely so. Likely so. However, in America, I think he was popularized by the alt-right, not by the intellectual academia ivory towers, just to be clear. Yes. Sniper's Ghost. I was in Europe in 99, and it did not look like it does today. You're fucking damn right about that. The place has been, yeah, the place has been Rickrolled. 14th column. You're right. Individualism has been beaten into Americans' heads. Freedom is universal. I see Europe as our white brothers and sisters, or at least close cousins. Yeah, I love the people of Europe who are white. We need to stand as one unified white race. Well, you're going to have some people fighting you on that. But yes, I agree anyway, for what it's worth. Trump demands that Denmark hand over Greenland. Heard about that? That's exactly what the U.S. Jewish chutzpah, Jew demon possession that is worse than that is the worst threat to the world's peace and security. Actually, that is very Jewish to do that, isn't it? Yep. To like want something for free, just walk up to Greenland and be like, hey, give us your fucking country. Of course, I have news on that, actually. It gets a little more complicated. Let's touch on this real quick then, because we may run out of time and some other things. I'll go ahead to the clips here. On the business of Greenland, this is very, very interesting. First, as you know, Trump had wanted to buy Greenland way back in his 2015 days and all that.
And also attracting Trump's interest again is by...
He restated it in 2017, and he's bringing it back up again, too, by the way.
...the territory of Greenland from Denmark. While announcing Ken Howery as his choice as ambassador to Denmark, he mentioned in passing, quote, "The United States of America feels that the ownership and control of Greenland is an absolute necessity," a topic which also came up during Trump's first term in office.
Well, the concept came up, and I said, certainly, I'd be strategically, it's interesting, and we'd be interested, but we'll talk to them a little bit. It's not number one on the burner, I can tell you that.
Okay, we've also heard where the Greenland prime minister said, no way in hell are we selling you Greenland. And yet, the tune has changed. Now, the Greenland prime minister is calling for independence from Denmark. And some are wondering, is this for the purposes of making a business deal with Donald Trump? Denmark, who owns Greenland, of course. We have the National Security Advisor giving his take. The former National Security Advisor under Trump giving his take on Denmark owning Greenland and how the U.S. might get it.
Denmark is now on the front lines of the war against Russia and China. They're like the Baltic states. They're like Poland. Because of their vast territory in Greenland. And so they've got to defend Greenland. And if they can't defend it, we're going to have to, and we're not going to do it for free. So the Danes can either put the frigate that's necessary there, they can put the air wings, they can put the missiles in Greenland, and they can put the infantry there that they need to defend the country.
Interesting, right? Yeah, I'm glad I cut out Jason Chavitz, who's really an annoying fill-in host, the former politician. Let's continue reading because I know that there's another dono in here. Let's see. Judea declares war on Germany. I get it. That's a good one. Nice. Whose Western country isn't controlled by Jews? You help prove my point. Good chat, Lisa. Have a good night. Yes, we love Lisa. And, that is crazy. 14th column. Fuck you, paid you. Thanks, Davis. And, $5 from 14th column, $5 from Bushmaster 6A. And there you go. All right. So now I'm in close competition with, yes, 1 hour as a fry chef. All right. Okay. Don't know if you can. You can also go to buymeacoffee.com. Here's what the page looks like. I'll show you. I decided to share screen. Oh, bam. Yeah. All right, buddies. Let's see. There is more. It's mostly in the audio realm. So let's do the following. Do I have another folder? Yes, we do. Here we go. Okay. I think on the way out, what I'll do is I'll play some clips over a fun image of a baby otter. Play some clips of the week. Some of it will be surprising, some of it not. How about we do that on a way out? And then, of course, you can go to NNR right after. Yeah, please do invite others if you could. It's essential that, yeah, it's essential we, yeah, anyway, support if you can. Okay, so that's what we'll do. I think I've already said it. Enough. Share screen. Oh, look. 1 year growth special on Otter Totoro. Oh, hello, little guy. Oh, there he is. Look at that. Yay. Make sure the audio's low. And it is. Okay, everybody. Enjoy. Don't know if you can.
We're back with new video from the FBI as investigators hope to track down the person who planted pipe bombs in Washington the night before the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Apple is going to pay $95 million to settle a proposed class action lawsuit that claims Siri violated its users' privacy. Mobile device owners say Apple routinely recorded their private conversations after they had unintentionally activated Siri. They claim the company then disclosed the conversations to third parties, such as advertisers. Now, one plaintiff in the suit said he ended up getting ads for a brand name surgical treatment after what he thought was a private discussion.
Beta! Amazing!
New laws are now in effect in California designed to curb crime in the state. Megan Myskowski with Cap Radio has more from Sacramento.
Together, the new California laws make it easier to combine similar crimes and charges, even across jurisdictions. They also raise penalties for felonies, including for damage done during retail theft. And they make it a crime to
I hate to say this, but it feels like 2020 all over again. Overflowing hospitals and thousands of patients with flu-like symptoms. China is facing a new health crisis, a new disease outbreak, which looks a lot like the Wuhan virus. And as always, Beijing is sharing no information.
I also think that ISIS and Al-Qaeda to a lesser extent, but mostly ISIS, appeal so much more. They have so much more outreach. And if you're downtrodden, and I've consumed their products for over 10 years, I have to dissect them, I have to train individuals on them. They're very appealing to many people who are downtrodden, who are very angry at individuals. They're psychologically geared towards individuals who are on the margins or in extremes of our population.
New data shows fewer 18-year-olds enrolled in college this fall. NPR's Janaki Mehta reports the analysis comes after the Department of Education delayed its rollout of the Federal Financial Aid Form, or FAFSA.
5% fewer 18-year-old freshmen enrolled in college this fall compared to last fall. That's according to data analysis by the National Student Clearinghouse Research Center. Some experts say the decline has to do with the disastrous rollout of the FAFSA last year. That's the financial aid form that allows students to get money from the federal government to go to college. Others say the Supreme Court's 2023 decision to ban affirmative action contributed. This drop in enrollment was seen widely across the country in 46 states. But the school year is only partway over, so colleges still have time to make up lost ground.
Ah, Bushmaster 6A just given 33. Thanks, buddy. It's very heartening. Really do appreciate that. And did I miss anyone else? Double check. It looks like... No, there we go. Yep. Thanks, buddy, for the 33. Much appreciated. Oh, only minutes, only moments to go. You should be going to NNR after, which the show will close out. Anyone else want to do a quick dono? I will make mention of...
which is intended to or likely to start racial hatred. So if you retweet that, then you're republishing that, and then potentially you're committing that offense. And we do have dedicated police officers who are scouring social media. Their job is to look for this material and then follow up with identification arrests and so forth. So it's a really, really serious. People might think they're not doing anything harmful. They are, and the consequences will be visited upon.
This era is not the time to be making new friends on social media.
The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development releasing their nationwide homeless count for this year, taken back in January, which shows an 18.1% increase. In 2023, the country saw a 12% increase. The rise, driven by a lack of affordable housing, natural disasters where people lost their homes, and the migrant crisis.
Millions of Americans are bracing for a winter storm that will send temperatures plunging and disrupt travel. The National Weather Service forecasts the storm will begin this evening in the Central Plains and then move east and slam into the mid-Atlantic. Heavy snow and whiteout conditions are expected in the Midwest, while freezing rain could lead to power outages across Appalachia.
This era is not the time to be making new friends on social media.
Right Perspective Radio.
It was so, so powerful.
Thanks for watching. Bye.
Davis Lowman.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Bye.
On purpose, one people, we are rise. On purpose, one people, we are rise.